Jarena in first of all.
Sorry, Chair. Can we just wait? The recording's just starting again.
Okay, thanks everybody for your patience. So I'm going to bring Jarena in first of all for some advice.
Thank you, Chair. Just, I suppose, to begin, I think it's important that we address the point that was made ahead of any evidence coming forward from a Councillor Malone. Just to advise that officers have had a number of meetings with the parish, and at those meetings there has been an agreed position to be reported back to the programme board. Following the last meeting with the parish, it was agreed that it would be reported back to the project board that officials continue to have positive meetings with Newry parish representatives. So just to put that on record again. And now we've taken the time in recess to revisit the governance arrangements, and ahead of your vote, councillors, I'd like to ask Conor Mallon to come in to provide clarification around the agreed governance arrangements with regard to the project board, as it previously agreed by council. So if I can ask Conor to come in, Chair, if you're content.
Yep.
Thanks, Drina. Thanks, Chair. As Drina has outlined, I've had a look at the stakeholder engagement and communication strategy that forms part of the governance documents for the programme board. And this sets out the categories of stakeholders and the method of engagement with those stakeholders. Now, the stakeholders, which would align with the parish, I'm making the assumption that they meetings led by the council.
Everybody seems to.
Yeah.
Sorry, Conor.
How far did it get?
I assume.
Yeah. I think you start again, Conor, because it was quite important, if you wouldn't mind. Sorry, okay. You just stopped out there totally.
Do you want me to start right from the start?
Please.
For clarity?
Yeah,
okay. As Drina has reported, I checked the stakeholder engagement and communication strategy that forms part of the governance arrangements for the programme board for the Newry City Centre Regeneration Project. This sets out the categories of stakeholders that we intend to engage with and the method of engagement with each of those categories of stakeholders. Now, I am making the assumption that the parish falls under the category of a community organisation, and the agreed method of engagement with a community organisation includes stakeholder meetings led by the council and focus groups on specific themes. And that's what I would like to provide you as guidance before a vote is taken. So it doesn't include programme boards or council committees. So thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you for that, Conor. Okay, members, so we had the proposal from Councillor Malone, seconded by Councillor Brown. We've heard the information from Jarena and from Conor, and we're going to then go for a vote on that issue. Maybe can I ask Sarah, are you content to do a roll call, Sarah? Is that the easiest way?
So, Councillor Malone asked for a recorded vote, Chair.
Oh, apologies. Yep, can we go for a recorded vote then as opposed to a roll call, Sarah?
Yes, no problem. Councillor Andrews?
Broke up, against.
Councillor Brown?
For.
Councillor Burgess?
Abstain.
Councillor Byrne?
Against.
Councillor Casey?
Against.
Councillor Clark?
Against.
Councillor Kern?
Against.
Councillor Devlin?
Against.
Councillor Doran's absent. Councillor Enright?
For.
Councillor Finnegan?
Against.
Gallagher's absent. Councillor Gibbons?
For.
Councillor Hanlon?
Against.
Councillor Hannah?
Abstain.
Councillor Hart?
Against.
Councillor Hyle?
Against.
Councillor Larkin?
Against.
Councillor Lewis? Councillor Lewis? You're on mute. Councillor McGuinness.
Against.
Councillor Malone.
For.
Councillor Mason.
Against.
Councillor McAteer.
Against.
Councillor McAvoy's absent. Councillor McKee is absent. Councillor McKevitt.
Against.
Councillor McMurray.
For.
Councillor Mulgrew.
Against.
Councillor Murphy.
Against.
Councillor O'Hare.
Against.
Councillor Murray.
Against.
Councillor Owen.
Abstain.
Councillor Riley.
For.
Councillor Owen.
Against.
Councillor Savage.
On the basis of the meetings happening on Tuesday, against.
Councillor Charvin.
Abstain.
Councillor Stokes.
For.
Councillor Taylor.
Abstain.
Councillor Tinley.
For.
Councillor Traynor. I'm sorry, Councillor Traynor's absent. And Councillor Walker is absent. So that's 8-4, 21 against, and 6 abstentions.
Thank you, Sarah, for carrying that out. So that proposal then has fallen. And we're going to move on. Then if we have any other matters arising under SPNR, and if not, then we're going to move on to Active and Healthy Communities Committee from the 15th of March. And we can go through for accuracy, page 1, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and 10. If we have a proposer for accuracy.
So opposed. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews, I'm not sure who that was that shouted out there. And
it was Dermot. Dermot.
Oh, yeah, second by Councillor Curtin then. Thank you. Okay. In terms of matters arising, Councillor Gibbons?
Yes, Chair. Can I just, it's more of a just a comment, a quick comment, because I know you're flat out at the minute. And God love you what you're going through this evening. I wouldn't wish it on my own worst enemy, but you're doing a good job. But look, it's just regarding the suicide prevention training that happened on the 18th of March, Chair. Through the Suicide Down to Zero initiative, there was, I just want to commend Owen Devlin and Sinead Traynor, especially for the work that they put, put together, to put the training together and set up the three. Pardon?
What page is that, sorry, in the AHC minutes?
In the AHC meeting, just regarding the Suicide Down to Zero initiative, Chair.
What page is it?
Well, look, right, well, it's just a comment, Chair, that the training took place on the...
We can only come in on matters that are actually on the minutes themselves. Is it featured on the minute? No, it's just a comment regarding.
Well, it's just a comment, Chair, just to commend the council staff and officials for their training.
But if I let you and I open up the floodgates, and God knows what else is going to come, but I appreciate you saying that. We're going to move on, okay? Councillor Charvin, you're in next there.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And it's under AHC 059 2021, Leisure and Sports Skill Charges. Chair, given the announcement from the executive from Monday, the 12th of April, concerning people up to 15 being able to train, as members will know, the council's policy is that no grass pitch within the district can be used for training facility, particularly from an adult age. Can the council look to temporarily suspend that, because there's many sports clubs right across the district that don't have access to their own facility and would rely on council to be able to do that training? And if they're not able to train on our grass pitches in particular, then they can't train at all and are at a disadvantage. Is that, Chair, possible that we are able to make that amendment temporarily while we're going through COVID until the point where the executive have changed the rules?
Okay, thank you. Gareth, we bring in Doreen at this stage.
It's something that we can look into, councillors, and report back to you. Yeah, I'll refer that back, see if we can do something there. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Idrina. I'm just conscious that Sarah's pointed out that Councillor Curran is non-AHC. Do we have somebody else to say? Oh, Councillor O'Mara, thank you very much. Okay. And we then move on to Councillor Andrews. Ian next there.
Sorry, I was something along the similar lines of Councillor Mark Givens, but I understand your ruling on that. So again, echo Councillor Givens' sentiments. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Councillor McKevitt.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. It's to do with, I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone here and trying to get my agenda. It's to do with the Warren Pine Tennis Club. I can't see what page it's on. The minutes are different here, the way it was sent to me. But I was going to highlight, is there an opening date from the officers as to when the tennis club can reopen after the COVID? Some indications say that up to two players can now play outdoor sports together with a direction from Stormont. And we're just wondering, is that the case for Warren Pine Tennis Club? I did promise them that I would raise it at the earliest convenience, and it's there.
Thank you, Karen. Can you come in, Dana?
I know Michael and his team were looking at the situation with regard to tennis clubs, so Councillor McKevitt, I'll refer it back to Paul Talley and ask him to contact Warren Point over the next couple of days and clarify that with them directly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dana. Actually, I did have an answer to that question, Karen, because the same was posed to me by Newcastle, but from the top of my head, I can't remember. Whenever I get it, I'll forward it to you as well, because definitely Conor Hawley had come back to me one day last week. Okay, let's see who's in next there. Councillor, we've got Esselitz, that was a second. And Councillor Gibbons, did you want to make a comment?
Yes, Chair, just quickly, I was just checking. The suicide prevention training was mentioned in the minutes of AHC item 206, just because I thought it was dope in there. So just to say again, thank you to the council staff and thank you to the council officials for organising the suicide prevention training. It was very much welcomed. Thank you.
Mark, I stand corrected. I'll always admit when I'm wrong, so apologies for that. Okay, Councillor O'Mara, you're in next there.
Yeah, Chair, just in the same vein as some of the other councillors that went before, would it be sensible to be following the guidelines of the executive in return to play initiatives and that? You know, there's many different sports that we're talking about here. We've got tennis courts, we've got golf clubs, we've got soccer pitches, we've got rugby pitches, we've got GAA pitches right across the district that some clubs will be totally reliant on. So there's actually guidance come out from the Ulster Council to club secretaries there this evening about return to play, where there's 15 players, 15 adults allowed on a pitch at one time from next Monday on. So you certainly couldn't get to an unrealistic stage where 90% of clubs across the district will be able to train on their own pitch, but the clubs that rely on council facilities wouldn't be allowed because the gates would be chained on the Monday night. We're going to need to act really, really quickly to make sure that that isn't the case. And, you know, like if we're able to make a proposal tonight that we stay in line with the guidance from the executive in terms of return to play so that sporting clubs across our district aren't the ones to suffer on it. Would it be possible to make that proposal, Chair?
Yeah, I think Barry. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think Doreen is going to take that issue away and report back. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know if we actually need an actual proposal. I think we're content to come back to you on that issue. If
okay.
That's okay.
Thanks, mate. I shall let us know. Yeah.
Yeah. No bother at all. Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, it was just following on there from Karen's query, just to Doreen, when she is asking for a clarification about the tennis fraternity. I'm not necessarily talking about the tennis, Warren Point Tennis Club, but the council owned in tennis court in the park in Warren Point. Could just ask for clarification it, because that would, the two-person rule may apply to it. And I know I was contacted by people asking about it and how that fits in with the latest rules brought out by the executive. So just to get clarification about the two-person as opposed to the club.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. Councillor Murphy, will you second in?
Yeah, it's okay, Laura. I was going to second Barbara's proposal if need be.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Thank you. And Councillor McMurray, I'm sure you were the same. Okay. If we've any other matters arising in AHC, are we content to move on then? Okay, if we can go to neighbourhood services and go through for accuracy, first of all. So page 1, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and 10 proposed by Councillor McKevitt. Thank you. Karen, the seconder for that? For accuracy, can I get a seconder? Councillor Casey, I know you're in to ask a question. Are you on that committee? Can you second those minutes?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not on that committee. No, I'm sorry. No,
Councillor McGinnis seconded. Okay, yep. Charlie, go on ahead. You're in there next.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. Thanks very much. It's NS037. It's the Council Tree Planting Strategy. Can you see it there?
Yep.
It's to do with there are a number of small trees planted just opposite the new museum on Castle Street. Some time ago, they were all very badly damaged. Some of them were actually stolen. First of all, were they replaced? And secondly, there were some trees planted on the canal bank near the Wynn Industrial Estate, which are, if they're left alone, they're going to be a fantastic feature. I must congratulate the council for doing that. And would they seriously consider going the full length of the towpath and maybe plant the odd cherry tree or something? Intersperse them the whole way down, because it will be a nice feature. So full marks to the councillor for that initiative. Thanks, Laura.
Okay, thank you, Charlie, for that. Okay, anybody else looking in there? No, I suppose just maybe one question maybe that I also just had in terms of actually the refuse collection, the holiday arrangements, just linked to that. The actual paper calendars, I know I'm not on that committee, the calendars that go out every year, will they be going out again maybe? Is that a question for Johnny on the call?
They will, sure, that is correct. But members can rest assured that the schedule will not have changed from the previous year, now moving into this year, but we will be issuing the calendars out to all households.
Okay, will that be done soon, John? I've had a few queries about that as it ended there last
week. Yeah, we're currently preparing that at the moment, so I can come back with a timetable to the University Services Committee later this month.
Yep, that's perfect. Thank you. Councillor Lewis?
Hello, yeah. Thank you. I was just to ask that, you mentioned there about the calendars, that in years previous there's been a delay in getting the adopted calendars out to parts of slave crew that still use the different colour of refuge bins. It's just to ask, is that on track at the moment, so there's not a month's delay in between them?
That's the Ballyward area you're talking about, Alan, yeah?
Sorry, yes, that's correct, yeah.
No bother. I presume they're all going out in one go, are they, Johnny? Can you clarify that?
Yeah, no, they will. They'll all go out in one go, so everybody's treated the same in that regard, Chair.
Perfect, thank you. Councillor McAteer?
Yes, Chair. Page 3, waste management. It's just on the recruitment of staff to deal with dog fouling. Can I just ask that as part of that initiative, that consideration be given to early morning visits, particularly to the Warren Point area and late evening, because that's the time when people really walk the dogs. And if they target the most fouled areas at those particular times, maybe you would get better results. So I don't know if that was in the plans or not, Johnny, but certainly that is what people on the ground are saying are the two, you know, the two suppose most prominent times where people do commit this offence as such, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. The exact same in Newcastle as well, I'm sure, right across the district. Yep, maybe Johnny can take that away and look at the timings for the targeted enforcement in those areas.
Just ask him. Yes,
sure, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. Thanks, Stephen. Councillor Clark?
Thanks, Chair. No, it's just in the Council's tree strategy. I welcome the tree strategy. It's a notice of motion I brought some time ago, and I'd like to thank the officers for working it up, Johnny Ellis in particular. It's just in regards to Council's own land. I think a number of months ago that I noted that we released land on Clawnacre within the Council area. So I would like to maybe, you know, add to the recommendations that we look at the land that we are putting out in Clawnacre and to see if we can maybe put that into tree planting in them areas. So I would like to welcome, as I say, I'd like to welcome the strategy. Obviously, it deals with the mitigating impacts of climate change, also flood alleviation visually. But for the natural environment itself and the habitats, having a proper tree strategy, I think, is essential for the council moving forward. But I think we need to look at our own lands, what we can do there, and then look at other strategy partners as well.
Okay, thank you, Willie. Okay, if we've no other matters arising, we can tend to move on with that minute. Okay, if we move on to the special AHC on the 18th of March. So in terms of accuracy, first of all, page 1, page 2 and page 3. Could I get a proposer and a seconder for their accuracy? Aoife, Cathy and Billy. I know we've got a few absent tonight. Can we get a proposer and a seconder between Terry, Mark, Aoife and Cathy for accuracy?
Proposed by Councillor Andrews and seconded by Councillor Mason.
Okay, thank you. There was a bit of a delay in my line there in terms of that coming through. Thanks very much. Okay, if we're looking for any matters arising out of that, are we content? Okay. If we can move on, and there's some correspondence in from the, there's nothing from the planning committee, planning section. We had correspondence from the Housing Council and the bullet and the minutes themselves, if anybody has any issues they'd like to raise. Okay. We then move on to the items of correspondence. The first one on the list there is a response from Minister for Infrastructure. I think that was following some comments that were raised at a previous meeting there. If you have any comments. Yep, Councillor Murphy, go on ahead.
Thanks, Laura. I know we were supposed to receive the letter the last time. There was a bit of a delay and stuff like that there. So I was very happy to read the letter, and I welcome, you know, many of the comments that are in it. And the fact that the Minister has committed to use the in-year monitoring rounds to bid for additional funding. And, you know, it's a fact, unfortunately. If you take a look at the state of our roads, you know, this isn't just a run-of-the-mill situation that we're in. This is an absolute crisis. I think, like any councillor, there's two big issues that, you know, most of us get in and deal with. One is housing and the other one is potholes. And it was a wee bit alarming to hear just on the news that, you know, with the amount of money that has been spent on roads and then the amount of money that has been spent by the department on compensation for vehicles that have been damaged, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, why there hasn't been a more serious attempt, you know, to deal with this particular issue. And, you know, as I say, I do welcome the fact that there will be a request for additional funds, but we can't let this situation just continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Declan. Declan, Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, sure. Yes, sure. Thank you. And again, on the correspondence, I know people got quite exercised at a meeting a while back complaining about Minister Mallon's inactivity in terms of repairing roads. I think the letter highlights quite starkly what the situation was, and I hope this is picked up upon by a lot of people, in that in June she requested a bid of 11 million and received zero amount last year. In October, she requested 6.5 million and got 2 million. So we see where the problem lies, certainly not with the minister, but certainly with the financing of it. But I just hope that that is noted to the public. But I do hope that people will get a dose of realism in the executive when handing out budgetary funds to that particular sector, and recognise what we've all been saying, that our roads are in a very, very, very poor condition. Not the fault of the minister, but certainly the fault of those financiers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Declan. Councillor Clark.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Chair. No, a welcome response from the minister, and I understand the financial constraints they're probably under. Obviously, we're in the middle of COVID. The majority of our resources from the executive will be directed towards health and COVID. But I welcome that the bid has been made. And if the minister continues to make the bids in the monitoring rounds, I think that would be welcome. But I think the question was about pedestrian, you know, in relation to pedestrian safety measures. Doesn't mention it in the letters. You know, the letter doesn't mention anything about pedestrian crossings, you know, that type of stuff. That was the type of maybe 20 mile per hour zones beside schools, that type of stuff you can do relatively cheaply. I think that's the point that we were trying to get across at the council meeting. The response that has come back from the minister, it's always the same roads maintenance. Even when I was in the assembly, continue, even when Conor Murphy was the infrastructure minister, it was the exact same thing. The first place they sort of cut was roads maintenance. And we always argued the point about, you know, if you don't put the investment into the roads, you're going to have to put a lot more money later on. And I think there's an understanding of that. But again, I suppose it's back to the block grant. We don't have enough money. Simple as that. In regards to pedestrian crossings, we get one in our entire area. You know, that's not acceptable. You know, and I don't see a letter that has been presented from the minister asking for more money for pedestrian safety. So I propose we write back to the minister, ask what requests have been made in regards to pedestrian safety.
Thank you, Willie. Do you have a seconder for that? Yeah, Councillor Murphy, thank you. Okay, are we all in agreement then that we write back to Nicola, the Minister, and query what bids we made in respect of pedestrian road safety measures in the district? Okay. Pete, did you want in on the same issue there?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'll be very, very brief. I suppose be ready for a long list of what comes back from the Minister when you write that, because when you're talking about the 20-mile-per-hour speed limits and stuff, I mean, some of the work that has been done over the last 2 years, you'll see an extensive list. Listen, I welcome some of the comments, because I did think, and you know, people say it's defensive because it's your colleague or whatever, but I did think some of the accusations that went in the previous meeting were quite unfair. And I welcome Councillor Murphy's comment on the road spend versus the compensation. I raised that at the last one, and that's why it's across two different departments, where DOF are giving out money in compensation, where it should be put into road maintenance. And it stated that in the Barton report. Said that it is absolutely ludicrous, but also what was the highlight of the Barton report on infrastructure was that you should not be doing any in-year bids for any money, because you're wasting your time. In-year bids towards the end of the year, it actually talked about how ridiculous that situation is, that DFI itself should be financed with longer budgets in that past 12 months. And we need to get serious with this if we want to work across department with DOF on actually putting the money into our infrastructure. We need to look at some of the recommendations that came outside that report. It doesn't matter who the minister is. I've said that, you know, when it back, they use Chris Hazard's response back in 2017, 2016, and it's the same response whoever the minister will be in 2030 unless we get real about this. And just briefly, the last point I'll make is, you know, Councillor Clark's talking about we don't have enough in the block grant. Yes, we can always call for more investment in this area, and I asked at the last meeting that we put pressure on Rishi Sunak, who talked about major investment in infrastructure that Northern Ireland sees as part of that as well. But let's call it as it is. The executive does not prioritise infrastructure in the last 2 years. Since it fell over 3 years ago, we haven't prioritised infrastructure. And that was a $311 million deficit from that Barton report over 7 years, 3 years down, and it has the smallest increase in budget. Now, you can conflate those figures by taking COVID money from that, just under $1 billion that came that went into infrastructure. But the money that went in the last budget is shocking, and it is the bottom of the department's tables. The next department above it is five times the increase in percentage increase in the budget. So let's be honest, the Northern Ireland Executive does not prioritise infrastructure. So the state of our roads is collectively something that we all need to work together on, and I hope that we do it instead of politicking on the issue, because the politics won't fill the potholes.
Thank you, Pete. Okay, if we're content to move on, we have a number of other items of correspondence there. I can go through them in order and people can indicate there if they wish to raise something. A response from the Treasury. Then we have another one regarding the from the Minister of Finance regarding the cuts to advice services. The next one was the Minister, response to the Economy Minister regarding the student COVID disruption payment. And then lastly, one was from the Department for Communities regarding the Child Poverty Task Force. So technically, they're all for Noton. If we can move on, then there's another response.
Sorry, Richard. Oh, that's okay.
You okay, Sarah?
Yeah.
Another response. Sorry, Councillor Finnegan, did you have a comment there? Sorry, before I bring you in there, Councillor Enright, you're on down the agenda. Sorry, yes, Aoife, go on ahead.
Just for 15 and 16, if I'm right in saying, I just want to thank the Finance Minister for his response and reflecting the difficult budget and the implications that this will have on departments and services such as the Advice Service. The British Treasury, to be fair, shouldn't have wasted their time with their abysmal response deals with none of the issues that was addressed, and it reflects even further that we are the victim of Tory austerity. The British government are not making decisions to help us here in the North, never will. Thanks.
Thank you, Aoife. Okay, then we've got two responses. The first one was from the Minister of Finance regarding the nearly zero energy bulletins. And the next one was from the Antrim Council regarding the holiday hunger. Yeah, Councillor O'Mara.
Yeah, it's on item 17. Just a quick comment about the COVID disruption payment for students. I was looking forward to this correspondence coming back, Chair, and just equally disappointed in its content. You'll have heard me raising before about the plight of some of the students across the district who don't go to university in Belfast or in Derry, or in, you know, they don't go to further education in Uri, or, you know, many of them find themselves in Dundalk or in Dublin or in Galway, or they could find themselves across the water in Liverpool and in Newcastle, you know, doing teacher training or whatever it is. And, you know, when people are filling out their UCAS forms and they're looking for courses that are relevant to them, you know, this never comes into it. It's never if the whole world goes pear-shaped, where am I going to get financial support from, or am I going to be penalised for not going to do my further education in the six counties? So again, it's a bit of a slap in the teeth for people that aren't continuing their education here in the six counties, and it's just disappointing. Thanks.
Thank you, Barra. Councillor Enright, is this the same issue?
No, just number 19, Chairperson. Is it okay to speak now?
Yes, sure. I could open go ahead.
Yes, I just welcome the positive response from Minister Murphy. However, I would note that the Republic of Ireland has implemented zero energy building since 2017 and 2018 for public and private sector, and some European countries have done it 10 to 15 years ago. So we'll be keep a watching brief on this and see if it's pushed through this year, please, Chairperson.
Thank you, Cadogan. Councillor Hanlon.
Thanks, Chair. It's just a comment on item 18 in relation to the Child Poverty Task Force. I know when the motion was brought through, I had commented on it and asked that we write to cross departments. So it's good to see confirmation coming back that that is being driven forward. And if I might just comment on 20 as well, in regards to the Mid and East Antrim Council writing to us, there is work going on within the Assembly. I do believe there's a private member's bill coming through from Karen Mullen MLA in regards to that. So there is work being done, and I think as a council we should be supportive of that. So thank you.
Thank you, Una. Councillor Clark.
Sure. No, just in relation to the item about the students, I think we're all in agreement, you know, that the young people and students, their lives have been turned upside down. I think that's particularly when you're away from home, you know, particularly if you're across the water or you're down south, you know, you have the additional costs, your extra costs, being away from home, travelling back and forth and whatever, you know. So I think anything that can be done, and I think we should be writing back to the minister saying anything that can be done, if we can change the legislation to ensure that these young people and other, it doesn't have to be young people, students, are given what were, it's a measly amount of money, what we're talking about. We're talking about £500, but it means a lot if you're, you know, if you're trying to cover your bills. So I think everybody should be treated equally, and if we needed, the legislation needs changed, or then that's what has to happen. Everybody has to be treated equally in regards to it. I know John O'Dowd has taken forward a private member's bill, I think. I'm not sure when it's going to be here, but I think our council should be backing that approach, and I propose that.
Okay, thank you, Willie. Okay, are we content then to move on to the conference, the number 21, the Irish Climate Summit 2021? Yep. This might be particularly relevant in the Sustainability Forum. If you want to pass on your names to Democratic Services, we can see then who's interested and where we go from there. Okay, if we're content now, it's now 10 to 8, 8 o'clock to start on the motions for this evening. You would have been circulated with a list of the one that we've deferred to the committee.
I don't mean to interrupt you. This is Willie Clark here. Chair, it's just in regards to the young people stuff about us writing back to the minister. I need a seconder for my proposal.
Oh, apologies, Willie. Okay, who's content to second that? Cathy, thank you. Okay, so we're writing back to the minister in terms of the grant for students.
Thanks, Chair.
Is everyone in agreement? Yeah, okay, no bother. We can move on then. Item number 21, that's just the conference, if we want to maybe just send the names through to Democratic Services. Then in terms of notice of the motion, as I was just saying there, we've been circulated with the list last week in terms of the motions that we're hearing this evening. The first one is from Councillor Enright. Cadogan, that one's been deferred to ERT. So if you're content to read out your motion and advise who is second in your motion, we can defer that on to the committee.
Chairperson. Yeah, the council welcomes the change of tone in the Downpatrick Town Centre Development Project. The department has accepted that there has been a market failure for these lands and that some public investment may be required to make the project happen. Council lauds the cross-party consensus that has made this change possible. It is no longer a fire sale of public land back to the private sector, and notes that there will be public money invested in this realm project as is proposed in Newry. Council now directs management to ensure the original footprint of this vital town centre development is included in the project to protect Downpatrick's options for the long term. In particular, one, that the land will be required for access out onto St Patrick's Avenue as envisaged by the Downpatrick Master Plan is acquired and protected as part of this project. And two, that the public investment also deals with the upgrade and integration of the three private car parks abutting the development to ensure that the town centre development is not left half done. This would not require acquisition of the land, but assistance to ensure that the public realm is brought up to standard while allowing those retail outlets to reserve their own private parking areas. This should be done as part of the existing project, or a stage two, for which the planning could start now and the town centre upgrade would be a coherent overall credit to the people of Downpatrick. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Cadogan. Can you advise who's seconded your motion and we can send it to ERT?
I think Patrick Brown seconded it, Chairperson.
Okay, that's a deferred ERT. Thank you, Cadogan. Okay, if we're content, then we move on to the next notice of motion. Councillor Brown, this will be heard at full council. If you want to read out your motion, advise who's seconding, and then to go on ahead and speak on it.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. So the motion reads as follows. This council opposes the harm caused to our LGBT plus community in the past through the denial of rights and equal treatment, and further recognises that discrimination still occurs today. This council acknowledges and stands against the ongoing harm the practice of conversion therapy brings to LGBT plus people. This council calls on the Minister of Communities to continue to work with the Minister of Health and Minister of Justice to introduce an effective ban on conversion therapy within Northern Ireland, supported by a programme of work to help tackle these practices in all their forms. Furthermore, this council will highlight and promote the continued support, counselling and advocacy our local groups provide to members of the LGBT plus community. Conversion therapy is a horrific practice that has no place in today's society. Conversion therapy is a term used to refer to various dangerous and discredited practices aimed at changing an individual's sexual orientation or gender identity. That could include attempting to change someone's sexual orientation from lesbian, gay or bisexual to straight, or their gender identity from transgender or non-binary to cisgender. It is also known as gender critical therapy and ex-gay ministry, among other terms intended to mask its purpose and intent. Evidence from the Trevor Project in the US suggests that up to 10% of LGBT plus individuals have been subjected to conversion therapy at some point in their lives, mostly when they were children under 18 years old. The majority of conversion therapy is administered through talk therapy, often invoking biblical texts, spiritual teachings and prayer, which has been colloquially known as pray the gay away. However, even more harmful forms of therapy exist, such as physical aversion therapy, or in some parts of the world, even electric shock treatment. Adverse childhood experiences or trauma are often wrongly given as the reason for a person's orientation or identity, with conversion therapy offered as a treatment for this, and I use that term treatment very loosely. Conversion therapy is often performed by unlicensed counsellors, life coaches and ministers. Although whilst much contemporary conversion therapy has been associated with faith communities, it's also very important to note that the role that many faith leaders have played in attempting to ban this practice as well. Conversion therapy is not a recognised form of therapy by any credible medical professional group. NHS England objects to conversion therapy as unethical and potentially harmful. The Royal College of Psychiatrists state that there is no sound scientific evidence that sexual orientation can be changed. The college considers that the provision of any intervention purporting to treat something which is not classified as a disorder to be wholly unethical. Furthermore, no credible scientific study has ever supported the claims of conversion therapists to actually change a person's sexual orientation. Thankfully, the Westminster government published their LGBT plus action plan in 2018, which contains more than 75 commitments aimed at improving the lives of LGBT plus people, including bringing forward proposals to end the practice of conversion therapy across the UK. Whilst all devolved regions are currently investigating legislation to ban the practice, positive actions so far from the Ministers for Justice, Health and Communities suggest that Northern Ireland could have the opportunity to become the first region of the UK to ban this practice. And wouldn't that be a huge achievement and a clear signal that Northern Ireland has moved forward as a society, given that it has often been the slowest in embracing progress on LGBT issues such as equal marriage? It is therefore vital that councils use all their lobbying powers to send a message and urge the prioritisation of this legislation and this Assembly mandate. So-called treatments of homosexuality and gender identity can create a setting in which prejudice and discrimination flourish, and there is substantial evidence that they are harmful in terms of the mental health effects they have, with reports suggesting those subjected to it are more than twice as likely to attempt suicide. This is all the more important when you consider the events and actions related to this issue in our own district in recent times, including the screening of a film supportive of conversion therapy at Ballinahinch Presbyterian Church in 2019, which was protested, I'm pleased to say, by some of the parties here tonight, and indeed the recent remarks by homophobic MLA Jim Wells, where he enthusiastically endorsed the harmful practice on national radio. It is therefore integral that Newry Mourne and Down Council sends a strong message out to the people of the district and Stormont that we will not accept this disgraceful practice and want to see it permanently banned through legislation from being carried out in Northern Ireland. I hope all councillors will support this motion tonight, and I'd like to thank Councillor Cathy Mason for agreeing to second it. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And I'll welcome the motion, welcome Patrick for proposing it, and the work that his colleague, Mickey Murray, has done on what's a very successful petition. But you know what, the fact that we have to speak in this motion, speak of this nature in 2021 is beyond distressing. The conversion therapy itself is still openly practiced here. It doesn't stand on each and every one of us. And I think it's an injustice that in the future that we will all unanimously, everybody in this chamber, we'll no doubt speak about it in the future when we look back. So I think it's important that we do all come together and speak about it tonight. We can't look at the LGBT community and ask us to speak about it without your support. We need everybody in the chamber to support it, and I hope to do. We've heard the disappointing and the weak response from the Minister for Equalities on the conversion therapy debate. I think it was early in March. We've waited 1,000 days, almost 1,000 days, since the UK government announced its intention to ban conversion therapy. And we shouldn't have to wait any longer. It's long past time that the Northern Ireland Executive stood up together to ban what I think are abusive practices here in Northern Ireland and right across the UK. That means a ban on all interventions that has the intention of changing, suppressing, converting or cancelling sexual orientation, gender identity or gender expression. Growing up as gay, I found it incredibly difficult. I can't stress how difficult I found it. Mentally, you torture yourself. You question yourself. you close down, you block out your feelings, you literally wear a mask every single day, and you know what's stupid? You pray you don't say something that'll give you away. How daft that sounds. You endure enough mental anguish to last a dozen lifetimes. So to me, when I look back, that's you internally practicing a form of conversion therapy on yourself. And that, you know, it's shameful, but that's how you feel growing up. Suppressing your own sexual orientation. And every LGBT plus person knows the damage that it does to you. So how we can allow this to be practiced openly and people signposted to it is beyond distressing. And for most of us, you generally breathe for the first time when you let it all out and you be true to yourself. But the difficulties don't stop there. You're confronted as a gay person by many situations that challenge you mentally. And that's if people say it's the cross that you have to bear, but it shouldn't be. And they pile up and they bring back dark thoughts of reverting or suppressing. And it's those obstacles that should be challenged by every single one of us. It's those obstacles that push my community backwards, not signposting us to abusive practices that are intended to change us. There's nothing about my sexuality that needs fixed. There's nothing about my sexuality that needs an intervention. After I came out, I moved in with my partner. I had difficulties with acceptance in areas, certain areas of the family. But when I got engaged, I was told I was bringing it too far. Did I ask how my engagement would affect other people across the family? Incredibly, I found myself questioning how far I can live my life without hurting others. And that might sound astonishing. It was the first time that I felt unintended shaming. And I know all LGBT people are exposed to it. And it's the shaming that's the hardest part of what makes people vulnerable to those that point them in the way of conversion therapy. And it's the shaming and those attitudes that need our full attention and the voice of everybody in this chamber not to be signposted to change anybody in the LGBT community. But I just want to touch on one short story. It only took me 60 seconds, but it's really important. Shortly after I got married, and I didn't really talk about it, but my youngest brother asked my husband to be godfather to his first child. And I was bloody over the moon. He was over the moon. Because for me, it was an incredibly important acceptance to ask my husband to be godfather for his first child. That joy didn't last long. Because when the form went in, with his name in it, the church stopped it. And the church stopped it because, I quote, we were living a life of sin. We were sinners that were given an itch and told not to scratch it, and we went and just scratched it. So that's the intensifying of the shaming, and everybody in the LGBT community has all these three stories that brings it home how difficult the shaming is and how it can push you into darker spaces mentally. Now, I'm glad that my brother, I told him to go and change, he picked somebody else as godfather after I had a big rant, and you know me, I rant on sometimes. But you know what, he stood up, and he didn't. He didn't change godfather, he changed parish. And he sat down with the priest of the new parish, and he explained the situation, and he's godfather to his first child. But that week that that happened, and I thought I wouldn't let anything in, that week I had my first panic attack. And I would have said, you know, something like this, you know, panic attack, just give yourself a shake. That quickly spiraled to 5 nights out of 7 every week with nocturnal panic attacks, waking up out of my sleep because it was mentally affecting me. So, as I said, I know how helpless you can get. I know the mental state that you get yourself into. But challenging those attitudes that put us in that space, how people speak and how people engage with the LGBT community, needs addressed. I don't need addressed. I'm not broken. How people see me is broken. So people who feel the same anguish don't need to be signposted to conversion therapy as an answer. And it makes me bloody angry that vulnerable people are further tortured by such practice. Just to finish, I was never comfortable talking about my sexuality. Still not. I feel as if it's nobody's bloody business. But I find myself in a public role, so I've had to learn to speak up. But by engaging and listening to each other, we learn about each other. A few years ago, I sat beside Lyra McKee and spoke at a public event about my personal experiences. It's the very first time I'd done it. And you know what? I learned a lot from it. I was embarrassed when I was asked a question on trans issues, and I said, you know what, I don't know, but when I'm sitting in front of you again this time next year, I promise you I won't say that again, because I wasn't over all the issues. But I learn, we learn, when we engage with each other. So engage with us on this issue. Ask our ministers to ban this disgraceful practice and support the mental health of all the people in the LGBT plus community. So the SCLP fully back the motion, but I'd just like to ask the proposer of the motion, Councillor Brown, if we'd also write to the UK Prime Minister, because I think it's 9 months since he said that there was going to be changes announced, and we're still waiting. So I think we should write both to the NIA Executive and the UK Prime Minister. Thank you.
Pete, thank you for that very, very honest contribution. Patrick, are you willing to accept that amendment to your motion to write to the British government?
Yes, all the help we can get. And I'd like to also thank the previous speaker for his contribution. I know we don't always see eye to eye in the virtual chamber, but that was a very moving testimony, and I do very much appreciate his contribution.
Absolutely, Patrick, thank you. Councillor Mason, you're in next. I know you were formally second in the motion.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to come in to second it there after Councillor Brown. I'm very, very happy to have the opportunity to second this motion. The practice of conversion therapy only seeks to denormalise and completely eradicate a person's sexual orientation, gender identity, or their gender expression. Conversion therapy is simply deeply rooted in intolerance and bigotry, with those that conduct the therapies regularly exploiting the vulnerabilities of young people who are struggling with their sexuality. I really welcome the work that Communities Minister Deirdre Harvey has done to date, and that she has committed to working to outlaw this deeply harmful and regressive practice. And I note the fact that she is working alongside the Justice Minister and Health Minister, and they're working with an expert panel to ensure that similar mistakes aren't made here as were made in other jurisdictions. I'm going to say that I mean ensuring that there are absolutely no loopholes in this legislation and no ways around it. In the 26 counties, the Sinn Féin Senator Clinton Warfield successfully brought forward a bill to outlaw conversion therapies in 2018. And the work of Senator Warfield and the LGBTQI plus community has resulted in the Irish government now committing to legislate against conversion therapies in the very near future. There's no question about it. It's just simply time to effectively ban conversion therapies and to stand against this hatred. We must and will continue to work across this whole island to eradicate hatred and provide maximum support for these citizens. This council must send a strong message and actively support the members of the LGBTQI plus community. So like I said at the start, I'm very, very happy to be able to support this motion from Councillor Brown.
Thank you, Cathy. Councillor Hannah.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yep, County Glenn.
The procession of the DUP will be abstaining on this motion, and I'm saying all that there, Pete, or anyone else. I have no problems with anyone. I take everyone as the meat, as I meet them, so I do. The therapy, as described, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, so I wouldn't. But in saying that, the reason we will be abstaining is because I believe it will suppress the views of those who maybe will not agree with where the procession of those possibly is coming from, the place where you're coming from, Pete. So on that, there, the DUP group will be abstaining on this motion. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Glenn. Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair, and I wasn't going to speak in the motion, but I'm just coming in after Pete's contribution. I think it was a very heartfelt contribution. So I fair play to Pete for articulating his view about how hard it was to come out in regards to sexuality and about how society views people's sexuality. And particularly churches and other, faith groups, they need to understand the suffering that people are having with their sexuality trying to come out. You think of young people in particular, where they're struggling. We all hear from family and stuff in regards to how hard it is for some young people to come out. Never mind their family, but it's the community as well. So I think we, you know, if, I like all what everybody else has said, or Kathy and them said, and Pete, and Polly as well. I'd like to thank him for bringing the motion as well. I think Pete's 100% right. It's factuality. There's no nobody else is right to.
Oh, you're frozen there, Willie. Can you?
Pete was speaking in regards to. Sorry.
I think your Wi-Fi's cutting out, Willie. Can you still hear us okay?
Just about. No, it's just to say I support the motion 100%. And as I say, you know, the experience that, that Pete has talked about is multiplied by thousands of times across the island, you know. So anything we can do to support people in regards to coming out in their sexuality has to be supported. So I'd welcome the motion and thanks for the contribution.
Thank you, Willie. Councillor Riley?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Chairman, I don't know. Are people forced into this, or are there people who maybe have are confused about their sexuality and want to meet with people who can counsel them? So I'm not. I don't know enough about it. I really don't. But I think to ban things because you don't like somebody's ideology or philosophy, you know, that's the start of a dark path. And one of the other issues that was mentioned about influencing people's sexual orientation, you know, there are kids as young as 11 years of age who are being given hormone treatments because they believe they're a girl or a boy. Now, I know for a fact, whenever I was 11 or 12 or 13 or 14 years of age, you know, if somebody had come to me and said, maybe you're a girl, you're not a boy, you know, how that may well have influenced people. And, you know, if we're talking about trying to influence somebody's sexual orientation, then all that sort of thing should be put on the back burner until people are past adolescence and can make informed judgments based on how they feel at that time and not whenever they're children. So there's a whole wider context to this. And I've listened to Pete, and Pete's a guy I have a lot of respect for. He's an open, honest guy, and I really do have a lot of respect for him. I don't want to say anything that would offend Pete, but I just think to ban things outright, you know, I think we're on a bad path, and certainly I'd be opposed to banning stuff. You know, and if you read about, I googled it there. I don't know much about it now, I'll be honest with you. But there does seem to be testimony from people who think they benefited from it. I'm not going to comment on that one way or the other. I don't know enough about it, and I respect Pete, and I'm not going to offend Pete. But I just don't like the concept of outright bans. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Henry. Gareth, I know you were looking at next, but Councillor Taylor's having a problem with his instant message. He was actually just in there after Henry. David, do you want to go on ahead, and then I'll bring in Gareth and Una?
Yeah, Chair, apologies. And listen, the comment section was working earlier and that's not. So just if you could keep an eye out for the hand coming up in the, you know, in the further motions. And it's not a red hand, just in case anybody's wondering. So, but listen, I suppose this issue, and there is an issue, I suppose, regarding the need for education on it. And listen, I know myself, it's probably not something I had ever much awareness of until fairly recently, and I've noticed there has been an increased level of debate, you know, and focus on the issue over recent weeks, both at, you know, local level and national level. I listened to a fairly extensive, you know, debate on it one day on Talkback there a number of weeks ago. I think it was one Thursday or Friday there, maybe about around fortnight ago. And certainly there was a lot of focus in that debate about the approach of governments, you know, both the UK government, you know, from our point of view, and indeed the executive, to conversion therapy practices and the issues that there are, you know, and concerns that are around them. Certainly, you know, I am aware that the issue will be discussed in the Assembly within the next week. And it's certainly something that my party colleagues are involved in terms of trying to seek to address some of the issues that exist on this issue. So, it's certainly something that, you know, I do think we do need more education of, and I do hope that the executive and governments do look at the issue further and try and address those concerns that do exist. So that's where we are on it, Chair. But as I said, I know there will be a debate on it in the next week or so, and there is certainly a lot of focus on it in a minute. And I think it's important that we all are educated in these issues, particularly if we are, you know, taking the opportunity to debate them, and it is a sensitive subject. And so I listened to Pete's testimony there, and it's great, certainly great emotion attached to that. And I commend him for speaking out on it. And it's certainly something we should always be very conscious of when we're having debates. The debates are respectful, and we are conscious about, the effect that it has on people. But certainly, it's something that we are, We're looking at the concerns that do exist on this, and that the executive should address them going forward. But, I think the debate has been respectful, Nate, and I think that's to be welcomed as well.
Thank you, David. Councillor Sharvin?
Yeah, Chair, I wasn't planning to come in on the item at all, but it's Councillor Riley, and I accept it may be the knowledge that he has around it, but I think he misses one of the key elements of what the discussion has been about, is the methods that are being used as part of conversion therapy is where it is wrong. The methods that are carried out to suppress a person. If you actually go to Spotlight, there was two GPs in Belfast that had a programme via Spotlight on BBC who clearly showed the trauma that they had went through as part of conversion therapy. And one of the doctors I know personally who, his family forced him. He was coming from a Catholic family, and he was forced to go to therapy because he was seen to be wrong. You know, I am a man of faith, but I truly respect everyone for who they are and who they wish to be. So the issue with this therapy is the approach that they go. You ask yourself, if you are ill, are you going to go to a doctor who's qualified and has went through university and has been certified to be that? Are you going to be and go to someone that has no qualification to be a doctor at all to tell you that you're ill? You know, that's the question you need to ask yourself as well. Are you going to ask someone that's qualified and certified? Are you going to go with someone that believes that they know better than someone else does? So I think the element that people really need to focus is on the approach and the practices that are used as part of this. So I fully support everything that most of the councillors have said so far.
Thank you, Gareth. Councillor Hanlon?
Thanks, Chair. I wasn't going to come in on this, but I do believe Councillor Riley has made some very, very sweeping statements there this evening, that don't sit easy with me as a parent, to be perfectly honest with you. I also sit on the Board of Governors of a local primary school, which is governed by the CCMS, and they, given I know there's challenges with the Catholic Church, but they themselves recognise that there's a lot of education needs to be done, and a lot of support needs to be given, not only to Board of Governors, but to teachers and parents in regards to gender identity. And I don't mean to take away from the motion, but I think that needs to be stated, because you did make very sweeping statements there. And children as young as primary one are identifying, that they're saying, that they identify as different genders. And, I would hate to think that any child would grow up in any society now feeling ostracised or feeling not supported, or just to have that level of, we all champion mental health, but yet when it sometimes comes to these areas, we're quick to shy away from it, and we don't want to talk about it, and we want to look at these crazy conversion methods, as Councillor Sharvin has said. There's no way that they're not backed by any kind of medical evidence or any psychotherapy, or it just... And I do think maybe, we all have a responsibility as elected representatives to educate ourselves and to make sure that we know that when we go out in public and we make statements, that we know the damage that it can cause and that we know what we're talking about. We may not agree with it, but at least we know the facts behind it. Thank you.
Thank you, Una. Councillor McMurray?
Yeah, no, I'll be brief. And again, just wanted to sort of reiterate and much of what's been said before, and sort of thank fellow councillors for some of their own personal testimony, and just really to say two main things, really, that, you know, a lot of this stuff isn't based on any medical reasoning at all, which just makes it downright dangerous then whenever you take that into consideration. And just secondly as well, that you know, again, I've touched on as a parent, as a father, you know, I would like to think that you know any child of mine would like to go somewhere where they can be you know be helped, you know, and be supported in what they are, and all the rest, and accepted for what they are, and just that's the nurturing that we need to take part and take forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Okay, can I hand back to you, Patrick, to sum up then?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. I'll be brief, just to say thank you very much to everybody who spoke on that, particularly Councillor Mason for seconding the motion, and again, Councillor Byrne for his very heartfelt contribution as well. I think that Councillor Sharvin also really hit the nail on the head in terms of his analysis of Councillor Riley's comments, in that, you know, by offering this sort of thing as a treatment, you're automatically assuming that there's something that needs to be treated, that there's something wrong, you know, and you can't cure love and you can't cure someone's sexual orientation. It's a core part of who they are. And yes, there needs to be a proper discussion, you know, within the legislation and so on, about transitioning and making sure that young children have the right support through that. And I do not claim to be an expert either, and I'm willing to have that conversation and listen to experts and listen to members of the community on that. But I think Councillor Riley is totally off the mark. I do want to recognise, actually, the contribution of Councillor Hannah. I do think that, you know, sometimes we set out to bash the DUP on these issues, but I do think there's actually progress there in what Councillor Hannah is saying. And I think there's actually, you know, there's been a significant change there from the first motion I brought to Council back in 2015 on equal marriage. It was probably a lot harsher things said in that debate than in this one here tonight, which I think overall was quite respectful and understanding. And I do want to recognise, you know, Councillor Hannah's contribution there in terms of steps that he's maybe taken on this and his party might be taking, and I hope continue to make, especially when there are party members within his party that have come out as cheerleaders of this harmful practice. So I'd like to thank him for his contribution. I think it's actually quite meaningful, and for everyone else who spoke in favour of the motion tonight.
Thank you, Patrick. I suppose thanks to everybody for the respectful debate and the contributions that have been made. And whilst there seems to be majority support, I think there's still we probably need to have a roll call on the motion itself to vote on it. Can I maybe hand over to you, Sarah, to take a vote?
Councillor Andrews?
For the motion.
Councillor Brown?
For.
Councillor Burgess for Sean. Councillor Burns?
For the motion.
Councillor Casey?
For.
Councillor Clark?
For.
Councillor Kearney?
For.
Councillor Devlin?
For.
Councillor Doran's absent. Councillor Enright's absent. Councillor Finnegan?
For.
Councillor Gallagher's absent. Councillor Gibbons?
For.
Councillor Hanlon?
For.
Councillor Hannah?
Abstain.
Councillor Hart?
For.
Councillor Hiles?
For.
Councillor Larkin?
For.
Sir Lewis?
For.
Sir McGuinness?
For.
Councillor Malone has his absent. Councillor Mason?
For.
Councillor McAteer?
For.
Councillor McAvoy is absent. Councillor McKay is absent. Councillor McKevitt?
For.
Councillor McMurray?
For.
Councillor Mulgrave?
For.
Councillor Murphy?
For.
Councillor O'Hare?
For.
Councillor Murray?
For.
Councillor Owen?
Abstain.
Okay.
Hello?
Councillor Riley?
Against.
Councillor Ruam?
For.
Councillor Savage?
For.
Councillor Sharvin?
For.
Councillor Sisson?
For.
Councillor Taylor?
For.
Councillor Tinley is absent. Councillor Trainor is absent. And Councillor Walker is absent. That's 28-4, 1 against, and 2 abstentions.
Okay, thank you for carrying that rule call out there. That motion then is carried. Okay, if we can move on to the next item on our agenda, is a notice of motion number 24. As you'll see from the order paper, 24, 25 and 29 are quite similar. So ideally, if the elements from the further motion made it into this first motion, it might make our night a wee bit shorter. Not too sure how short it's going to make it, but definitely a wee bit shorter. So Councillor Owen, you're up first if you want to read out your motion and advise who seconded it, please.
Okay, yeah, certainly. My motion is the Violence Against Women and Girls Strategy. The Council recognises women concerns across the UK and the Republic of Ireland after the disappearance and subsequent murder of Sarah Everard. It has placed the spotlight on the safety of women and girls. This council is to request the Northern Ireland Assembly initiate a violence against women and girls strategy, endorse and promote the Women's Aid petition calling for the violence against women and girls strategy to be implemented, to form a task force to develop a publicity campaign promoting safety apps and engaging with the PSNI, Women's Aid and SOAR Optimist, Great Britain and Ireland, ask other councils to do the same, and it'll be Councillor Hannah that'll be seconding this motion. Let me start by giving some startling statistics, but I must give a caveat as some of those have been hard to find specific to Northern Ireland, which in itself is concerning. In 2019, the UK recorded 1,355 forced marriages, with 206 of those being children under the age of 15. In 2018, the Belfast Trust had reported 17 cases of female genital mutilation during a 9-month period. In Northern Ireland, it's not mandatory to record these cases, unlike the rest of the UK. 91 women and children were human trafficked in Northern Ireland in 2019, 16 of which were children. In Northern Ireland, 3,560 sexual offences were reported during 2019-20. This has been growing steadily. 31,848 domestic abuse incidents were recorded in Northern Ireland between January 2020 and December 2020. Since the pandemic started, 8 women have been murdered. There isn't a woman around that hasn't been touched by the murder of Sarah Everard. She was only walking home. What I want to say at the outset, that I recognise that domestic abuse and sexual offences are not exclusively a female problem, but no one can deny that they are disproportionately affected. Groups such as Men Advisory Project are to be commended and do fantastic work. I speak on this topic from personal experience. At 18 years of age, I fell foul to prolonged physical and sexual abuse at the hands of a boyfriend. In the 90s, you didn't go to the police. You just picked yourself up, brushed yourself off, and went on. You were told that they wouldn't believe you, take you seriously, or that they had much more important things to be dealing with. You'd feel as though somehow you brought it upon yourself. Maybe you deserved it. In my case, he was my boyfriend, so who was going to believe me? Even today, 25 years later, I still instinctively feel the same shame. And this is the first time I felt strong enough to speak out about it. But those of us on a public platform must do this to help others. Sadly, in 2021, many female victims still feel like this. And with only 39.2% of suspects getting charged, who can blame them? They put their necks on the lines, swallow the shame and report it. More often than not, it to be ignored. Women and girls must feel empowered to come forward. Women have to carefully choose what clothes they wear in case they draw the wrong type of attention. Show too much skin and we're asking for trouble. Not enough and you're dull and boring. Women have to keep to well-lit areas, tolerate inappropriate touching, and are not able to go out on their own at night. In 2021, are we still having to have these conversations with our daughters? I know I am. In 2021, some of the predatory behaviour has now moved online. Social media, with its unrestricted access, has become the ultimate no-holds-barred way to anonymously subject women to abuse and intimidation. This online abuse is almost without exception of a violent sexual nature. It takes seconds to find contempt and sexism towards women online. Then there's the pressure of young girls to send sexually explicit images of themselves. For it then to be shared around in group chats. 2,050 calls were made to government-funded helpline for revenge pornography, with 73% of the callers being female. Northern Ireland is our shared home. It must be a better and safer place for women and girls. While these are complex matters with no clear quick fix, we must try. It is for these reasons we need a violence against women and girls strategy, and we need it now. We can't be stuck here in 25 years with women still feeling the same shame as I do today, and they must have the power to speak out. We need to protect the next generation. We're the only hopeful nation to not have a strategy, and frankly, that's deplorable. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Catherine. Again, another very honest and heartfelt contribution. Thank you for that. Councillor Hanlon, you were in next there. I know that Councillor Hanlon is second in the motion, but if you want to come on ahead, and you're in next there on the instant chat.
Thanks, Chair. And I don't really know how to follow that, Catherine. I think you're extremely brave, bringing your story to such an open forum. And I'm sure you have the solidarity of all our councillors here this evening that you had to endure that. One of the reasons why I had wanted to bring the motion, and I welcome that there's three motions the same, because it is such a serious topic. But obviously, what happened to Sarah Everard, and then following on with the two ladies in Rathcoole very shortly after it, it really does highlight, the need for a strategy in the north. And it really is unacceptable that we are the only place on these islands that doesn't have a strategy to tackle gender-based violence. And really where I see what is crucial is looking at education. And I totally resonated with me what you said about teaching your daughters and, thinking about what they're wearing and all that. But, equally, I educate my sons that they treat women with respect and that they understand consent and all those things too. And I think that's, at the heart of what we're trying to achieve here. Your statistics in terms of the lack of reporting is, I think it's stark. The fact that things are not recorded, I think that women can't report. And we only have to look back to the trial that happened not so very long ago, as became infamously known as the rugby trial, and what that girl went through. I mean, it would just put anybody off even coming forward because it became such a media circus. But that's another story again. So, there really does need to be a zero tolerance approach to gender-based violence. We need to give women and girls the confidence to report and to know that the criminal justice system is going to stand by them every step of the way and make sure that they're supported. So I think, given that there is three motions and given the seriousness of the subject, I feel that if you would accept it, that we would try and combine the three motions together. Really, I think that would send a really strong message from Newry Morning Down Council. I do recognise as well that before or after we submitted the motions in, Catherine, that the motion was passed in the Assembly too to back a gender-based violence strategy. So the only thing I would add to yours that's so similar to my own is that we write to the Minister of Justice and the Joint First Ministers and the Executive Team and ask that they really press ahead with this strategy, that it just doesn't become a motion that got a few headlines and then just falls by the wayside again, and that Newry Morning Down Council really want to see it being progressed as quickly as possible.
Thank you. And before that, I suppose, Catherine, to keep things very clean as we move along, would you be content to accept that amendment?
Yes, yeah, certainly. Thanks. No problem at all, Una.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Una, for that. Councillor Hannah, I know you're down second in the motion. Do you want to speak as well?
Yeah, just a few words, Chair. I'm more than happy to second Catherine's motion there. I've spoken to her on different occasions about similar type things and experiences. But I have three daughters. I have all went to university. And I know, listening to some of the stories that they felt they could tell me, there is all sorts of issues. So there is whenever, and young ladies growing up, the violence is there. It's sometimes, to be quite honest with you, possibly us men, for want of a better way of putting it, need to look at ourselves and the way we treat others. even should it be as simple as just wolf whistles at girls coming up the street. I honestly, I've never did it, so I haven't, and I believe it's a form of disrespect. Violence in general, and I'm surprised that Northern Ireland doesn't have a strategy. I wasn't aware of it, so I always thought it was just there. We all need to come, fall in behind this and support it. The females in our community, right from whenever they're very, very young, up to their in their latter years, suffer from this, you know, and it's just in our culture, and we need to change, we need to learn from everything that's happened in the past, and it's just simply wrong. Violence against anyone's wrong, so it isn't, especially against, I may say, you know, against the weaker gender, possibly usually the stronger gender, because you can multitask and do all sorts of things that I can't do. So, to be quite honest with you, Catherine, thanks for bringing the motion there, and I'm fully in support of everything you've said. Thank you.
Thank you. Glenn, Councillor McKevitt.
Thanks very much. And Una's right. How do you follow that, Catherine? It was, I don't know, there's a reason why people come into politics and to public life. And I think your reason was tonight. Very, very powerful, honest, and not easy to admit to what went on in your earlier years. I think you've been absolutely brilliant, and you've raised your voice, and keep raising it. Like all women in politics, it's not an easy job to do, and just can't help get emotional about some of the personal stories here tonight. Catherine, you've been brilliant, and thank you for taking the motion, and the SDLP will be supporting it. I do agree with Una that you know, there was three motions very similar on the table tonight, and if you would accept maybe the last line of our motion, which reads after years, and in addition, this council agrees to consider developing a financial support fund for women's groups across our district, and declares its commitment to making our area a safe place for everyone, and acknowledges that women should feel safe in public places everywhere. I think that if Una's right, you know, bring it to the Assembly, the Justice Minister was wrote to in the past, based on the strategy, letting her know our council's opinion when I took in the misogynist motion. And but definitely, like, you know, a letter to her, but I think let's go that wee bit further, you know, let the women come together here in all our groups and support the women right across the district, because we do have the support of the male councillors as well here tonight on this. So I think a financial support fund would complement every word that you've said tonight, Catherine, because if we can make the difference as local elected representatives to one more life, that's what it's all about. Well done.
Thank you very much, Karen. Was that an amendment then? Catherine, would you be willing to accept that line as an amendment to your motion?
Yes, certainly. No problem at all. Thanks very much, Karen, for contributing that. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. If we can move on then. Councillor Lewis, you were in next.
Thank you, Chair. Just to start by saying to Councillor Owen, just to thank Councillor Owens for bringing this motion, and indeed recognise the very personal testimony and account that she did bring, and to say that she had spoke to me on this about 2 weeks ago to say that she felt really strongly, and that she wanted to bring this motion forward, and just to thank her for it. I think that it also sends a very strong and positive message to the Justice Minister, and indeed to the outside world, that this motion is being supported tonight by all parties on the DM Council, and indeed that the three motions that had been put in with good intent has now been combined to one. I have a young daughter. I've got another one due in June. And I would hate to think of them being treated with some of the stories that we've heard through the local press. And I think that it's no exaggeration to use the term that you would you would do time thinking of anybody doing them harm, and I think of that just demonstrates the level of anger that any parent would feel, and I think that we need to take that as we go forward in life, and recognise that I also have a son, and there's the chance there to teach the two girls not only how to stand up for themselves and to let them know that they aren't second class citizens and that they don't being spoken to in a way lesser than their older brother, but at the same time that he knows how to treat women. And I just want to comment on the experiences of our own party councillor, Jill McCauley, that some of the text messages and the phone calls that I have seen that she gets are absolutely abhorrent. In 2019 also, I was away on an foreign exchange trip with a member of a different party. She was a young councillor, just newly elected, and some of the text messages that I was sitting next to her and seeing her getting in lifetime were ridiculous, and the extent of people had actually went to find out her home address, her phone number, and were actually demanding that she text them back right now. That's the sort of behaviour that you know that we sort of don't see, or that we don't accept has happened. And some of those stats there that Councillor Owens has put forward has been shocking, and speaking personally, shamefully, I didn't know that was the level of forced marriage and female genital manipulation that was ongoing, and that is absolutely shocking and just goes to prove that we do need some sort of strategy to deal with this. And just finally, just wanting to bring just two stories that really bring this home to me. I joined a gym. I'll not say a word, but within the first week of being there, I walked in to the locker room, and there's this fella. Now, he definitely wasn't young, but he was passing a phone round the locker room, showing the rest of the boys pictures of his partner or his wife or his girlfriend. And I just thought, why would you have that level of disrespect to someone who you're meant to love, to actually do that? And that just demonstrates the level of disrespect that there currently is within society for women. And the second is, I remember when I was 19, 20, that I was first allowed to go to the big bright lights of Belfast, and seeing all the girls walking around with these wee like wine holder things on top of the glasses and the bottles, and I was astonished, literally astonished, to find out that if you're in a big club, that you had to put these on top of the bottles to stop the bottles being spiked. Can you imagine sending your daughter out knowing that she has to take that level of safety and precaution within a club? So look, I'm happy to back this, and also the Unionist Party are happy to back this motion. Indeed, if there's anything that this council can do to put pressure on the minister and the executive to put some sort of strategy in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Chair. I wasn't intended to speak tonight, but I must say that to Catherine, I was moved by your openness, and hearing your testimony about your own personal experiences wasn't easy, and you're to be commended. And the same as Pete, when he spoke in the previous motion, fully support your aims and objectives, along with the points that were tabled by councillor colleagues and the other motions that were tabled as well tonight, you know. And by adopting the motion tonight, you know, the council has sent out a clear message that we're leading the way in this worthy and important campaign. So, again, I'd like to thank you. And to all the speakers, tonight wasn't easy, and to open up and to speak from the heart. Again, as Stephanie, as I said, it's been a very important and a very meaningful meeting tonight to hear it firsthand from the heart. I know it's not easy putting into words, but again, it's not easy to come onto a public platform like a virtual council and to open up and to share your life's experiences and all that. Again, I do hope that this campaign will go. I'm stuck for words myself now, but I just wish everybody and the aims and aspirations of the campaign and of the motions, I wish success, and please God, you know, the place will be a lot better as a result. And to everybody concerned, keep up the good work, and I'll be supporting you in principle. But thank you very much to everybody tonight in this motion and in the previous ones. Again, I'm proud of you, and thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Terry. Councillor Brown?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Of course, we'll be supporting the motion and the combined motions, rather. And I'd like to start by thanking in particular my Rowellan colleague, Councillor Catherine Owen, for her incredibly powerful and moving testimony on this topic. And thank you for bringing it, and thank you to everyone who's spoken here tonight in support of it. There's far too many stories relating to violence against women and girls. And indeed, it's hard for me to think of a female family member, friend, girlfriend who doesn't have a story somewhere there along their lines during their lives, and it's just far, far too many of them. As men, we really don't realise or understand sometimes just how different it is to walk in a woman's shoes, and we don't realise how lucky we have it. You know, I've never had to, you know, ring up a friend when I'm walking home at night to keep them on the phone so there's someone there to speak to, or you know, put my keys between my fingers as a fist as I'm walking to my car in a parking lot at night, or, you know, checking my drink to see if it's foaming when you're handed it. All things that I know female friends have done and have told me that they do on a regular basis. So I think the best that we can do as men and as allies is to listen, to learn, and to most importantly act to address this. So thank you again, everyone that's spoken, and particularly Catherine.
Thank you, Patrick. Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair, and likewise, I welcome the combined motion that we're going to end up. It shows you how serious the issue is, that, you know, a number of political representatives brought the motion forward. I think Councillor Brown touched on it there, that if you talk to women in general, you know, nearly every woman has had an experience or a sexual pressure or abuse in some format. I think there was a poll carried out recently. I think it was in around 90% of women had some sort of sexual pressure or abuse put on them. So I think every victim is someone's daughter, or victim's wrong word, survivor in some cases. And I suppose as men, we need to understand that as well. We need to remember, you know, how difficult it is for women to go about their daily lives. You think of going even to a car park at night, or walking up the street or whatever. And the point that Councillor Brown made about in regards to phoning, yeah, my daughter would phone me when she walked on the street at night as well, for that reassurance as well. You know, so I think there's something wrong, drastically wrong, and I think it is down to men need to be educated, young boys need to be educated, that women are should not be treated in this manner, and I think that has to be taken even from the primary school level right up. I spoke to a number of women, just even in around the party, in around family and stuff, and the majority had some sexual approach without permission, you know. The lesser degrees, but it is an extremely serious situation we are faced with. And as I said, Chair, I think it has to go back to education young men, that the abuse of women and shouting abuse of women is not appropriate.
Thank you for that. Willie, can I hand back to you then, Catherine, to sum up?
Yeah, certainly. First of all, thanks very much. I've got my composure back again. I want to thank everybody for all the support that you've given me. Obviously, it goes without doubt. It's something that's really important to me. One thing though that I do really want to get across is balance. Okay, I don't want men to feel like this is a finger pointing at every single man. You know, I'm a daughter, a proud daddy's girl. I'm a loving wife. I'm a mother of a son. Some of my best friends are men. I have many, many best friends that are men. So I want to thank every man that stands by a woman's shoulder, not in front of them, not behind them, but stands by a woman's shoulder. And we have some fantastic men. So it's important to make sure that we get that balance. But I would like to say that, you know, I've done this for every single woman who hasn't yet found their voice. It's taken me 25 years to find my voice, and it's not easy. And there's many women, older generations than me, that still stay hush-hush and say nothing, and, you know, when it'll go away. You would like to hope that, you know, 25 years on, it would have been a lot easier for women to come forward. Unfortunately, it's not. And unfortunately, you still feel like you're going to have this huge, big label stuck on you. You know, a bit like what Pete said, you know, somebody who's been the victim of sexual violence, rape and physical abuse, still feels like they've got a big label stuck on them. And I know certainly Pete probably, for his own reasons, maybe went through a similar thing within his own family. I hope in 2021 we can begin to remove the shame, and I hope I've given some strength to some women to come and step forward and listen genuinely from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank every single one of you for all of your support and all the wee private messages that I've got since I turned my camera off, from you all individually. So thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you for that, Catherine. So clearly there's been unanimous support there for your motion, and also thank you to Una and to Karen and Hugh's absence as well for your contributions. So given the fact that those motions were included in that one, number 25 and 29 now will fall because they've been included in the main motion there. So thank you for that. If we can move on to the next, there was a motion, number 26 in your agenda papers, is from Councillor McAteer. Declan, if you want to read out your motion and advise who is second, it'll be heard at full council.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Chair. I'm motion for second by Councillor Savage. The motion reads, this council condemns the genocide against the Uyghur and Kazakh Muslims in China, up to 1 million of whom who have been detained in re-education camps in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, expresses solidarity with the Uyghur and Kazakh people and the many others living in China who face the violation of their basic human rights every day. That the council abhors the decision of the Member of Parliament for South Down to express solidarity with the regime responsible for these crimes and resolves to write formally to the Chinese Consul General to express our horror and disgust at the treatment of these minorities. Chair, this motion evolved from recent incidents and news coming out of China regarding the situation around the Uyghur and Kazakh Muslim ethnic minorities in the Xinjiang region. These people have been subjected to severe human rights abuse. This abuse has extended to the internment of at least 1 million people who have been held in over 380 camps, where they are supposedly being re-educated. This re-education is aimed at eradicating their religion, language and culture. There is also physical and psychological abuse of detainees, including torture and forced labour. Children are being forcibly separated from their families. Disturbingly so, women are coerced into having abortions, sterilizations, and IUDs fitted, all to stymie any further ethnic population growth. In fact, the birth rate in that particular region dropped by one-third, statistics show, in 2018. This persecution began in 2014 with the introduction of laws aimed at curtailing Muslim traditions, such as having beards, wearing hijabs, head scarves, and wearing clothes with crescent moon insignia. Those who didn't conform were categorized as unsafe and sent to the re-education camps. This was followed by the destruction of mosques and cemeteries. Cumulatively, These acts are classed as genocidal in international law. With the expansion of these re-education camps, it is time to call this out for what it is. Based on our own history and experience here in Ireland, with the suppression of a minority culture and its language, we cannot stay silent on human rights abuse by any major political power. The demand by a communist state for the total subordination of its ethnic minorities to the state's identity is undemocratic. We value and welcome our growing relationships with China. We also welcome the moves towards a more open society there, but we view this behaviour as a retrograde step which we cannot ignore or compromise on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Declan. Councillor Hannah?
Chair, if maybe Councillor Savage wants to come in before me or anything like that there, I don't mind.
Michael, do you want to go on ahead there if you were second in the motion?
Yes, Chair. I just wanted to briefly reiterate what Declan has said. You know, in the 21st century, we can't sit idly by and turn a blind eye to what's going on in China at the moment. And I think that if we've learned anything from our own history, is that we need to stand up for ethnic minorities of all hues and opinions. And it's very important that we send that message out tonight from this council. And I'm happy to second the chair.
Thank you, Michael. Glenn, back to you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Michael. To be quite honest with you, Declan, I've been sort of watching this as it's been developing on the news. And it's unbelievable what's happening in China. And to be quite honest with you, sometimes I think Western governments put their economies sometimes before the need to put pressure on the governments to stop this type of behaviour. Some of the things you've described there is just totally abhorrent. You cannot do that to people. It's actually torture. It's murderous. It's just unbelievable, so it is. Us and the DUP will be supporting your motion, Declan, and to be quite honest with you, I'm glad you did it to highlight what is going on. It's unbelievable, that's it. So, Declan, thanks for bringing the motion, and us and the DUP will be supporting you.
Thank you, Glenn. Councillor Mason?
Yes, thanks, Chair. I'd like to start with saying Sinn Féin are very, very clear in their stance against human rights abuses. And I have zero doubt that this is also the MP's stance. This motion simply does not reflect the tweet that Councillor McAteer is referencing here. The reference to solidarity was in line with the ending of absolute poverty. I don't think anybody in this chamber would not stand in solidarity with the ending of absolute poverty. We can talk about strides to end poverty in the US without it being referenced to Guantanamo torture camp in Cuba. I feel this motion is very disingenuous. It's a political stunt staged by Councillor McAteer. I must note that it is also quite interesting that a quick Google search of Councillor McAteer and Eger shows up absolutely zero results. It perhaps proves that Councillor McAteer had very little prior interest to this other than scoring cheap political stunts. Certainly this is not what this chamber should be used for, and at this time specifically. I also wonder if the SDLP are so concerned about this issue. I wonder if the Chair can clarify that during her recent meeting with the Chinese Consul General, where she was discussing opportunities for collaboration, did she raise these points of concern with them directly? Perhaps the Chair can clarify this point. Or if when the previous Chair, Mark Murnan, signed the friendship agreement with the Chinese, did his party colleague, Councillor McAteer, criticise him at this time? I also wanted to ask if Councillor McAteer actually took the time to ask the MP about his views on this matter, or has he just decided to write this motion to attack him? The MP only expressed his views on the eradication of poverty and the forthcoming campaign to tackle health inequalities. Sinn Féin are against the denial of human rights and will continue to campaign to highlight the plight of those who face persecution, are subject to coercion or any form, or continue to be denied any basic human rights.
As we believe this motion is merely a stunt by Councillor McAteer to try and score cheap political points, and the SDLP are being highly hypocritical, and so we cannot support this motion as it currently stands.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. I suppose just to clarify, I did meet with the Chinese consulate in my role as chair of this council, along with Marie as chief executive. I didn't express any solidarity with any regime. During our meeting, we discussed trade and operations for cooperation in the medical field, and I think that's actually on record. So, Councillor McMurray, you're in next there.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, no. Speaking to the general motion about the, you know, China is essentially trying to eradicate the culture of the Uyghur people. Every expression of difference is being crushed. An attempt to cleanse bad ideas, and by what that bad ideas are is freely practicing religion, having long beards, and maybe even using WhatsApp. You know, Xinjiang province is on the western periphery of China, approximately 12 million people. And, you know, sort of through the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of tightening of restrictions around their culture. Slight opening up of the 80s allowed the Uyghur people to rebuild. And then from the 90s, I've seen that sort of repression and restrictions brought in again. But 2009 really marks sort of the beginning of the current bloodshed. And, you know, there's been a number of terrible atrocities on both sides. Uyghur factory workers in the east of the country beaten to death. Dozens of Han Chinese were then murdered in retaliation. And then, you know, hundreds of Uyghur people lured on the streets by calls, dealing in prayer, owning machine gun and cold blood. I mean, and then again, Xinjiang separatists kind of murders, knife attacks on, you know, in Chinese train stations. All the while, these protests have been met with force by the state and the police. And this is an all too familiar backdrop to the securitization of a region, which has its own origins and what is essence is a Chinese conflict. I mean, you know, it's the stuff that this goes on is just, it's awful, you know, everything from, you know, the surveillance, the arbitrary recalling of passports to prevent movement, human rights lawyers prevented from repressing, representing and practicing to defend the peoples, people, you know, being inserted into houses to observe people they diverge from what is deemed correct citizenship, even financial rewards for people to marry up and pair up and become good family. And again, they're rather Orwellian re-education camps. Over 1 million detained without trial and internment camps were horrible, horrible practices. Forced labour, torture, rape, sterilisation are documented by those who managed to seek asylum. But there's also instances of deportations from countries back to China to be interned in these camps. But it goes beyond the Uyghur people. It goes on to, like, journalists, Irish, British, other international journalists, essentially being intimidated out from reporting the situation and forced to flee. One can only imagine the restrictions placed on independently minded Chinese journalists. So where independent journalism is prevented, a spotlight will not be shone on the human rights abuses taking place. However, again, as is probably right, you know, this isn't anti-China posturing. Rather, targeted solutions are needed. And between the United Kingdom's permanent Security Council seat and Ireland's two-year term on the Security Council, then hopefully some of these solutions can be found, and perhaps this motion will do well to convey our concerns for the Uyghur people. So we're happy to support. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Andy. Councillor Lewis?
Sure, thank you. I think it's good to hear that Sinn Féin do stand squarely behind human rights. I think there's a few things in our recent past which we'll good look at and see what the human rights were there. I think that this tweet, I often sometimes wonder about most of the tweets that the South Down MP posts, but this tweet in particular, whenever we do look at the shameful abuse that China does have on human rights, the arrest of 53 pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong, the severe restriction on religious freedom and the freedom of speech, and indeed the what's called the Great Firewall of China that sort of limits any social media activity and the dissent. Whenever you look at all that, you wonder what the South Down MP would be doing, passing comment on that anyway, that there's bound to be more issues, more important and pressing issues at home, but of course this tweet combined with the tweet about the rotten Orange State just combined that really some people shouldn't be tweeting or that they should focus on the job that they're meant to be doing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Alan. I know Barry, you're next to the list. Councillor Taylor was actually in just before you. I think that his chat's not working. David, do you want to go on ahead there?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And apologies, Barry. I just didn't say I'm having an issue with my chat. So, and you can't say it was in there just before that. So, listen, Chair, many of us recognise that China are a major world trading partner with countries, you know, including our own, and that I'm not trying to deny that, but that doesn't mean that we ignore the human rights abuses that take place as well, and they need to be challenged at every opportunity whenever we do have the opportunity to do that. You know, there has been, you know, obviously a fair amount of detail here about, you know, even the impact that it's having on the Muslim community in China. We see the issues that have arisen in Hong Kong, and even, you know, there's persecution of Christians even in China, you know, as well as we speak. We're in a situation where there's, you know, they've had restrictions placed on it in the internet, you know, social media, and churches have been monitored and closed down, you know, whether they're independent or not. And it's not just the introduction of these new laws that impinge upon, you know, that Christian faith, for instance. It's also the stricter implementation, for instance, of existing laws such as the sale of Bibles. And again, I'm not trying to take away from the original, you know, origins of the motion, because that's vitally important, but it's just to say that this is a wider, you know, issue as well within the Chinese regime, and certainly there's an intense pressure being placed on different faiths in that country by the government. And we're seeing, you know, increased, you know, issues regarding raids and harassment of people of faith and their families, and, you know, thousands of churches have been destroyed or damaged, and some even have had their possessions confiscated. And, you know, you have a situation even where, for instance, crosses have been removed from churches, and, you know, and these issues have to be challenged, because if in any civilized democracy, this cannot happen, irrespective of whether they're a major trading partner or not. It cannot be allowed, and sometimes I feel we're maybe, you know, tinkering around the edges for fear of offending. But I think it's clear that we do need to challenge these issues when they are, you know, are so severe, and that's the only way I can describe it, because it is extremely concerning to see, and I think things are deteriorating actually in that regard regarding freedoms that people enjoy in China. So, you know, it's important that this motion was brought forward tonight to have that debate, you know, and we could probably talk a lot more about it. I think, you know, there's a lot more details we could, but I just thought it was important to note that it's, you know, and I think your motion has mentioned that, Declan, that there is a severe impact on people of many faiths in China as well. There's a severe attempt to try and impede their attempts to practice their faith. So thanks for bringing forward the motion, and I'm glad that we've been able to have this debate tonight.
Thank you, David. Councillor O'Mara?
Yeah, and Chair, without going over too much of what Councillor Mason had to say, you know, Declan has taken a really good motion and has just lazily thrown in a side swipe at Chris Hazard throughout it, which is really demeaned. I'm gonna read out some of the tweet, or the tweet that Chris Hazard sent. He said, "Great to see President Xi has announced the end of absolute poverty in China this week. China has spent more than $1.6 trillion in this historic endeavour, including 10 million new homes and 25 million renovated homes. Xi now has now vowed to eradicate health inequalities. Solidarity." So what Chris Hazard is celebrating is the end of absolute poverty. He's felt strongly enough about it to tweet about it, as much as to say, wouldn't it be great if there was an end to absolute poverty in Ireland? Wouldn't it be great if there was an end to absolute poverty in Europe? And Declan McAteer has taken his words, assumed them to mean something else, and then used huge inference during this motion to insult Chris Hazard and insult anyone else who doesn't see it his way. I would propose an amendment to this motion. I would propose that Declan considers taken out from the word abhors to the second semicolon, so that he would take out abhors the decision by the Member of Parliament for South Down to express solidarity with the regime responsible for these crimes, which I can see no evidence of him ever having done that. So, you know, I think it's hugely unfair, Declan, for you to state that. and resolves to write formally to the Chinese. Right, so I've no problem in writing to the Chinese, but I propose that he takes those words out of it. In order to be fair to Chris Hazard, and as Cathy says, Declan, do you see if you had contacted Chris Hazard before this meeting or in the weeks leading up to it and asked him and said, look, do I have this, the reading of this tweet right? Because I'm going to name you in council papers and then we're going to debate you in council papers and it's going to be splashed all over the media. And people might say that I misinterpreted what you said and then I would look like an idiot. So, Declan, if you're happy, will you please amend the motion?
Thank you, Barra. To go back to you, Declan, at this point, would you be happy to accept that amendment from Councillor Moore?
Not in the context, sorry, that it was given at all, unfortunately, from Barra, because Barra has spent most of his time speaking, actually, defending Chris Hazard. And I never mentioned Chris Hazard. I actually deliberately kept his name out. I just remembered the member of Parliament South Down. But Chris Hazard, the member of Parliament South Down, had every opportunity to actually correct his tweet. Didn't do it. He was pursued by the media. He purports to represent the people of this area, at least this part of the constituency. He didn't represent South Armagh. I didn't hear Mickey Brady saying anything. But so I'm very disappointed to hear that, in fact, Sinn Féin delegation have turned this into a political points worm defence of
I'll come back to you.
I couldn't accept that particular one. No.
That's okay. I just want to check at this point you'd accept it, but I'll come back to you sum up afterwards. Okay, if we can move on then. Councillor Clark, you're in next there.
Yep, thanks, Chair. Thanks,
Chair.
No, following on from Barra, I would say, first of all, that the council, you know, at every opportunity in regards to basic human rights and protecting minorities, we are very conscious of that moving forward. I think all political parties are conscious of that moving forward. But the motion, I think, as Barra has outlined the motion by trying to, you know, tag on Chris Hazard, MP, has diluted the motion, in my opinion, because it's been outlined. I'm not going to go into the detail that was outlined earlier, but obviously, he was welcoming, you know, President Xi about ending poverty in China. And who wouldn't welcome that? Who wouldn't welcome to bring people, families out of poverty, building them homes? You know, why would you not welcome that? I think that's what the solidarity message was about. I never seen the tweet, but I just heard it mentioned in regards to that. But as Barra said, if you talk to Chris, or MP, he would have articulated his view and set out the case what he was trying to make. You know that every country should be bringing people out of poverty. You know it's not just China. China seems to be fashionable at the minute now to hammer since the Trump administration took the decision to hammer them. And this is a lot of it's about economics, but in regards to we're talking about children being forced from their families. Sure, that's happening in America. That's happening in America. People from South America coming to America, their children are being separated from their families by the Trump administration. And there's still difficulty even under the Biden administration to get that sorted out. So it's not just China. It's throughout the world that people are being discriminated against and are being basically abused their basic human rights. So we don't have to look too far, you know, in regards to oppression. We look at Ireland, for example, the oppression in Ireland, the famine in Ireland, the million people who died in Ireland, the millions who had to leave Ireland because of famine, because of poverty. You know, when you look, you take this back, every country has. Every superpower, in particular, has caused these types of outrages. China, as I say, China, you can't back what they're doing in regards to these, and what I would call them is internment camps. That's where they are. The British invented the internment camp during the Boer War in Africa. It was the British who introduced the internment camps. Under the direction of Churchill. So
you know, there's a lot of issues in regards to abuses and abuses of superpowers. But what I think what I'm trying to maybe articulate is we condemn the actions, the motion or the amendment that Barr is making, by taking Chris Hazard, our MP, who should we should be working with, not trying to bring him into some sort of political embarrassment. And I don't like to see that type of motions coming before the council in general, and I wouldn't generally attack political opponents in that way. And I think if Declan, if you do consider take that part of it out of the motion, then we can support the motion, or unless we're going to have to put the motion then to the vote. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Well, I think at this stage, Declan, he's not accepting it, so we'll continue on, and we're back to sum up, and then put Declan's motion to the floor for a vote. Councillor Brown, you're in next there.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I wasn't actually going to come in this debate because, you know, clearly my colleague, Councillor McMurray, has done an extensive amount of research on this, and thank him for that. But I think there's a couple of, you know, points that I wanted to touch on. I fully agree with what Councillor Clark was saying. You know, no nation has their hands clean of these sort of things, and I think we need to be very cognizant of, you know, just blaming China, Donald Trump style. I mean, just look at the massive rise in Asian American violence over in the States right now because of that harmful rhetoric. You know, I don't think we should just be out here to bash China. We do need to work with them. They are a major superpower. And I have actually discussed this sort of stuff with the Member of Parliament for South Down before. I actually recognise he has done a lot of good work with China as a Confucius scholar or something like that he is. And, you know, fair play for that engagement. You know, I'd probably take a slightly more negative stance on the Chinese state myself. But at the end of the day, we do need to engage. So I was actually going to come in and second with Barra's amendment there to remove that reference, because I do think that the motion has just, whilst it is a very important topic, it has just been put up here to attack the member of Parliament for South Down. And I know, you know, Declan saying it wasn't directed at Chris Hazard, but, you know, my recollection as a candidate in the 2019 Westminster election was that Chris Hazard was the man who won that election, not the SDLP candidate, not myself. So it was very clearly directed at Chris Hazard. So I do think we should take the personal and the politics out of it and recognise the important issues that are still there in the motion. There you go. I've been agreeing with Sinn Féin and the UP tonight in this council meeting. It's a very odd one indeed, but there you are.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay, can I hand back to you then to Declan to sum up, please?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yes, sir, I'm certainly listening to some of the contributions, some I agree with, some I don't. Glenn Hanna, I must say, was probably the most encouraging of the lot, because he did say that we're inclined here now to put the economy before anything, and before human rights, and before small regions of the world that are forgotten about. Certainly the intention was never to deliberately put down Chris Hazard, but unfortunately he does represent the politics of South Down, and we as a council have every right to express a different opinion. And as I said, the opportunity was there to correct this. We're correcting a wrong that was seen, that delivered on behalf of our constituents, by taking this motion tonight and making it very clear, hopefully, when it's voted upon, the views, the overwhelming views of the people of South Down in terms of what China is meting out to some of its constituents, just as the British did in Ireland to Catholic, Protestant and dissenter. And I don't forget that also as a Republican. And I'm glad my unionist colleagues tonight agreed with me on this one. Didn't say you cited the British internment camps here in the north of Ireland. They took the motion as it was really intended, was to criticise an evil that's been perpetuated in the far side of the world that we're having increasingly close linkages with. And a lot of people are afraid of this. And that is the main thrust of this. People are afraid of China. But hopefully the people south down are not afraid of China. So thank you, Chair, for allowing me to sum up.
Thank you, Declan, for that. Sarah, there does seem to be some dissent there. Can I maybe ask you to do a wee roll call in terms of the vote, please? And apologies, Mark, I know you put your C in there. It was after Declan started to sum up, so unfortunately I can't take you in now. So I'll pass back to Sarah for the roll call, please.
Yes, no bother. Councillor Andrews?
For Declan McAteer's motion.
Yeah. Sorry,
Emma? Yeah, I thought we were voting on the amendment.
No. We could put no. Understand in order 17.13. Yeah. Declan didn't accept the amendment, so we vote on the substantive motion first of all. If Declan's motion happened to fall, then we could go back to the amendment. But if Declan's motion passes, then the amendment doesn't be voted on.
Are you sure about that, Chair? I think in the past when amendments have been offered, the amendment's been voted on first, and then you go back to the motion.
You go back to substantive motion.
You can dig out your stamp order 17.13, and that's my rule, and it says there very clearly, where any amendment is rejected, the question of the substantive motion shall be put, which is what we're doing now. That's what I've been doing at the start of my term in terms of these, my interpretation of the stamp order. You can check them out if you want. So if we can move on then, Sarah, with the rule.
I don't want to overrule or whatever, but the substantive motion is the amendment with the motion.
No, it's not.
It is?
I think we should seek clarity on this because that's not my understanding of the standing orders either.
It's definitely not mine. It's not the way that I've been interpreting the motion, the standing orders from the start. If anybody, it's up to the member whether they accept the amendment. If they don't accept it, then we vote on the actual motion itself.
No, if they don't accept it, then it goes to vote.
That's the ruling. Can we move ahead, Sarah, please?
Chair,
that's the way I've been doing it from the start,
this,
folks.
From officers,
opinion on this? Can we have legal opinion on this direction on the standard order?
Yeah, Doreen is just reading through now. Willie, 2 seconds.
Go. Chair, not to interrupt, but given that the vote has commenced on previous motions, once the vote has commenced, the vote needs to be sought through, and that was the guidance. That was the guidance of an SPNR vote by Marie Ward, Chief Executive of this council.
At that same SPNR meeting, the SDLP called for an adjournment in the middle of a vote, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Folks, to be fair as well, I made my ruling. The voting has started, so I'm content to go ahead with it. I mean, certainly, if it needs to be challenged afterwards, then so be it. But it's been the way that I've been conducting the council since I started last July. So, Sarah, can we continue, please?
Yeah, Councillor Andrews?
So I could use this blinking technology for Councillor McAteer's motion. I'll be voting for.
Councillor Brown?
I abstain on the basis I don't think standing orders are being followed correctly.
Councillor Burgess is absent. Councillor Brown?
Four.
Councillor Casey is absent. Councillor Clark?
Against.
Councillor Kern?
Four.
Councillor Devlin?
Four.
Councillor Dorn and Enright are absent. Councillor Finnegan?
Against.
Councillor Gallagher is absent. Councillor Gibbons?
Against.
Councillor Hanlon?
Against.
Councillor Hannah?
Four.
Councillor Hurst?
Against.
Councillor Howell?
Against.
Councillor Larkin?
Against.
Councillor Lewis?
Four.
Councillor McGuinness?
Against.
Councillor Malone's absent. Councillor Mason?
Against.
Councillor McAteer?
Four.
Councillor McAvoy's absent. Councillor McKee's absent. Councillor McKevitt?
Four.
Councillor McMurray?
I'm going to abstain, but just that I hope it is noted, they spoke in favour of the Uyghur people when it comes to the minutes, Chair. Thank you.
Councillor Mulgrave?
Against.
Councillor Murphy?
Against.
Councillor O'Hara? Councillor O'Hara, you're on mute.
Against.
Councillor O'Murray?
Against.
One?
Sorry, four.
Riley is absent. Councillor Rowan?
Against.
Yes. Councillor Savage, you're on mute.
For.
Councillor Sharvin.
For.
Councillor Stokes.
For.
Councillor Taylor.
For.
Okay, I have 13 for, 14 against, and 2 abstentions.
Sarah, thanks for doing that roll call. So that proposal then falls. So what we can now do is move down to the next amendment. Barr, do you want to make your proposal there again and we can vote on that?
Yeah, thanks a million, Chair. Would have been quicker if I had just accepted in the first place. But to take out from between the two semicolons, so let me see, abhors, from the word abhors, abhors the decision by the Member of Parliament for South Down to express solidarity with the regime responsible for these crimes, to that semicolon. Just to take that 2.5 lines out.
Thank you, Barr. Nothing seconded then by Councillor Clark. Sorry, Sarah, you'll be hearing these names in your sleep. Can we get another roll call again for that one, please?
Yep, no problem. Councillor Andrews?
For the amendment.
Councillor Brown?
Four.
Councillor Burgess is absent. Councillor Brown?
Four.
Councillor Tracy is absent. Councillor Clark?
Four.
Councillor Kern?
Four.
Councillor Devlin?
Four.
Councillor Dorn and Edward are absent. Councillor Finnegan?
Four.
Councillor Gallagher's absent. Councillor Gibbons?
Four.
Councillor Hanlon?
Four.
Councillor Hannah?
Abstain.
Councillor Hart?
Four.
Councillor Hiles?
Four.
Councillor Larkin?
Four.
Councillor Lewis?
Four.
Councillor McGuinness?
Four.
Malone's absent. Councillor Mason?
Four.
Councillor McAteer?
Four.
Councillors McAvoy and McKinney are absent. Councillor McKevitt?
Four.
Councillor McMurray?
Four.
Councillor Mulberry?
Four.
Councillor Murphy?
Four.
Councillor O'Hara? Four. Councillor Murray?
Four.
Councillor Owen?
Abstain.
Councillor Riley is absent. Councillor Rowan?
Four.
Councillor Savage?
Four.
Councillor Sharvin?
Four.
Councillor Stokes?
Four.
Councillor Taylor?
Four.
I have 27 for, no against, and 2 abstentions.
Thanks very much, Sarah. So the motion then is carried. Okay, if we move on to the next item on the agenda, which is number 27, a motion from Councillor Mason. Cathy, if you can read out your motion, just advise who seconded it and then go on ahead and speak on it.
Yes, thanks, Chair. The motion reads that this council recognises that the demand for mental health services has been rising considerably even prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. It notes that there is currently a postcode lottery in operation for GP counselling services and that residents in this district are severely disadvantaged when accessing counselling services compared to other areas. This council commits to writing to the Minister for Health to ensure that the mental health strategy commits to end the postcode lottery for access to in-house GP counselling services, lobbying the South Eastern and South Health and Southern Health Trust to ensure adequate resources are in place for GP surgeries to provide in-house GP counselling services, actively supporting the GP surgeries across our district to become fully operational providers of counselling services, providing quick and accessible support, and to actively promote in-house GP counselling services across our district. This motion was actually inspired by a recent meeting with a fantastic group of campaigners from the PPR project. The hashtag 123 GP campaign is made up of people with direct experience of seeking mental health support, their families and carers, and those who have lost loved ones to suicide. They are campaigning for changes within and beyond mental health services to ensure that anyone who has experienced emotional distress, pain or trauma can access timely and appropriate support to help. They are also calling for a new script for mental health to be written, one that focuses on fixing the policies and systems that can cause distress and trauma not only to the people who are subjected to, not on the people who are subjected to them. This has been a heartfelt three-year campaign led by the hashtag 123 GP campaigners for timely access to talking therapies for everyone who needs it, and provides information and analysis in relation to accessing talking therapy, focusing specifically on access to GP counselling services, one of the two main referral routes available at primary care level. When someone has experienced emotional stress or trauma, GP practices are the first port of call. Yet here in South Down, only 45% of our GP surgeries offer in-house counselling services, meaning that those suffering at times must wait for weeks to receive any type of talking therapy. People do not have the luxury of waiting for weeks or months for these services. Unfortunately, we are living in an area that is trapped in a postcode lottery when it comes to adequate counselling services, with agencies failing to accept the responsibility to adequately resource and equip our GP surgeries. Having engaged with the hashtag 123 GP campaign in recent months, I'm asking that Newry Morning Down must actively pursue the Health Trust to commission these urgent services for our local community. The Health and Social Care Board and the Regional Health Trust cannot be allowed to pass the buck when it comes to this district's health and wellbeing. There is little doubt that COVID-19 has exacerbated the existing mental health crisis in our society. However, it can also present an opportunity to open up access via digital methods such as video calls, especially in those services, surgeries where physical space is an obstacle. As we begin to ease out of restrictions, it is critical that we're appropriate, that appropriate support is in place for both providers and those seeking help. We must see dedicated regional and all-island plans in place as a matter of urgency. As we move out of restrictions in the coming weeks and months, the additional areas of needs are likely to be families recently bereaved from COVID-19 and or non-COVID-19 deaths, survivors of COVID-19, long-term sick, unemployed, struggling business owners, children and young people who have missed months of education and social interaction, older people who are already vulnerable to loneliness and social isolation, essential key workers, and last but not least, our health and social care staff who have experienced trauma on the front line. The Mental Health Action Plan released by the Health Minister certainly is a good start, but needs to be further developed to expand the section on addressing COVID-19 and on fully implementing the suicide prevention strategy. It is so important that well-resourced, clear and urgent pathways must be developed to deal with the inevitable mental health surge in the time ahead. GP surgeries must be adequately resourced to provide timely access to counselling for everyone who needs it. It must also ensure that nobody waits for longer than 28 days for a routine appointment and no longer than 2 for an urgent one. And also to provide people with options for accessing counselling in their local GP practice through the talking therapy hubs run by the Trust. A set of regional performance indicators should also be developed to include awareness of the service and access points, waiting times, numbers of sessions offered, and self-reported outcomes. Similarly, the North South Ministerial Council response to COVID-19 must include planning for an all-island approach to mental health. We need to fund our services properly, end the recruitment crisis, and ensure services are available to all people across the island. We need now to plan to develop an all-island mental health system. Whilst the coming months and years will present many challenges, it also presents the opportunity to build a world-class mental health service that we all deserve. In the North, we face unparalleled mental health challenges with some of the highest reported rates of post-traumatic stress disorder in the world. We are living in a society that is relying on the voluntary sector to prop up the health service when it comes to mental health services. Unfortunately, the increase of pill dependency, drug and alcohol misuse, and the lack of adequate support services are putting severe pressure on these voluntary groups. This is simply not acceptable. However, it is the reality, and this third sector is currently picking up the pieces and so must also be given the adequate resources to be able to work effectively. This council must play its part in ending this postcode lottery for counselling services currently operating here in South Down. And Councillor Finnegan is going to second the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Cathy. Councillor Andrews?
First of all, thank you very much, Chair. And first of all, to Cathy, Councillor Mason, I'd like to say thank you for bringing such a very important motion to tonight's council meeting. And I'm just wondering, Cathy, would you be able to, just for sake of now, would you be able to accept, if we just get the text, accept a wee side amendment after writing to the Minister for Health, etc., to put in place, and also the executive, to put in place additional funding and resources to support this essential and important service. I'd say overall, I agree very much with the sentiments that you've expressed in the motion. On a personal basis, I'm very passionate about mental health, etc. And you know, at the demand for mental health services, there's obviously much pressure at this time and will increase considerably post-COVID. We will be entering uncharted territories, uncertain of the demands and needs that will be placed on such an important matter that will impact so many. We need to ensure, and it's very important, we need to ensure that the proper funding and the resources are in place to provide help and much needed support and essential services to those who need to avail of these services. Our civic centre is located at the Downtown in Downpatrick, and this complex was the cradle and lead in psychiatric care. And many who were employed here in those days went on to be leaders and specialists in mental health care. I know recently at our special council meeting, I know mental health services was mentioned, and Phillipson House also was on the agenda. And you know, I'm glad that extra funding has been secured for this facility, which plays a pivotal role in this area. And just to let you know that in welcoming the motion, the SDLP group and on the council will be supporting you. And thanks for bringing forward such an important motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. There's a slight amendment there, was there, to the motion?
Yes, with Cathy's indulgence, after writing to the Minister for Health that and the executive to put in place additional funding and resources to support this essential services for all who will need and avail of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Cathy, would you be happy to accept that amendment?
Yes, no problem, we'll do.
No bother, thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Mason.
Councillor Finnegan, I know you're second to the motion, but David Taylor was just sitting in front of you, and I'll bring you in after, if that's okay. David, do you want to go on ahead?
Yep, thanks, Chair. Listen, the LCU Unionist Party is very happy to support the motion, and I think even the Health Minister, and I know from conversations that we have had with him, and certainly through some of his commitments and announcements that he's made during his period as Health Minister, he's fully behind improving mental health services in Northern Ireland. And I think that the appointment of our mental health champion was very clear, a commitment on his part to try and improve understanding and to try and work towards delivering better services to deal with mental health. And I certainly concur with the comments that there is a significant demand for those services. And unfortunately, we do find ourselves in situations where services in certain areas aren't available that may be able to be accessed in other areas, and that does need to be addressed. But I think there's no doubt that the Minister is committed to doing that, and that will be brought to the fore through the mental health strategy. But certainly, as a council, it does no harm for us to reiterate that and to certainly support any moves that there is to do that, because it's clear as time goes on, and COVID has had a significant impact on people's mental health. There's no point saying anything different. I've certainly talking to people on a regular basis. And I see that people are certainly struggling with the current climate and then the current restrictions that we have in place, whether it be our even our ability to go to work, for instance, and probably before this, people said it would have been great working from home. I have to say, even from a personal point of view, it's not something I've enjoyed. I think it's good to get out and see people and talk to people and be able to even have a walk up the street at lunchtime. And I think probably we've taken that sort of stuff for granted going forward, and it does have an impact on everybody's mental health. It's not something we're naturally accustomed to, and certainly because of that, there has been people that are very severely affected by this, and that has increased pressure on services. So, I certainly hope that, obviously, and I know that the Minister is taking this issue seriously, and certainly I hope that our trusts in the area, both the South Eastern and the Southern Trust, will be able to provide with the necessary resources to make all the services that are required available to our population. So thanks for bringing forward the motion tonight, Councillor Mason.
Thank you. David, Councillor Finnegan.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I want to endorse all that Councillor Mason has said here tonight in our motion and reiterate the importance of these services for those in need of it, and that it should be available to all, everybody across the district. Especially in recent years, mental health has been recognised and prioritised more and more. The need for talk and therapy is an all-time high.
We've all had a time in our lives where we have bore witness to mental health issues and that and we have felt ill-equipped to handle with ourselves. We've also witnessed constituents being put on waiting lists for far too long. Having in-house GP counselling services can ensure that the end of these lengthy waiting lists and also having these resources on our doorstep would be a huge advantage to our communities. And I'm happy to second. Thank you.
Thank you, Aoife. Councillor Owen?
Thanks very much. First of all, want to thank Cathy Mason for bringing this forward. I think certainly in the middle of the COVID pandemic, it has never more been prevalent how much we need counselling services. I know certainly GPs would be somebody, probably the first health professional that people feel comfortable to open up to. So there needs to be this service within the GP setting. And that's really where all the referrals come from with GPs. And it can sometimes be something, you know, you're maybe in and you're talking to your GP and then, you know, you're maybe in for another thing, but all of a sudden then the need for counselling comes out. People don't feel comfortable in hospital settings or with people that in an environment that they don't feel in order to open up and to get the most out of counselling services. We also as well have to realise that even with the legacy issues that we have here in Northern Ireland particularly, obviously our mental health figures are significantly higher than the rest of the GB, yet we lag significantly behind the rest of GB as far as the counselling aspect is concerned. As well then with COVID, then on top of everything, COVID has obviously impounded an already terrible position that we're in. You know, mental health has affected my family. And sometimes, you know, people have really got to be at the end of their tether before they can actually get any support, quite literally on their hands and knees in some cases. So absolutely delighted to support Cathy, in her motion. It is certainly something that the DUP will with no question get behind. And yeah, that's it. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Catherine. Councillor Gibbons.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just a quick one. Thank you, Cathy, for the motion. It's a topic that's very close to my heart, and that motion, reading through it there, it's a prime example of a motion that will work. And just thank you. Thank you very much for putting it through tonight. It's excellent.
Thank you, Mark. Cathy, can I hand back to you maybe to sum up? There does seem to be unanimous agreement and support for your motion, but if you want to sum up, please.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Look, I'll just keep it short and sweet and thank everybody for supporting the motion. I do think that it's an extremely important subject, and I know that it's very close to a lot of people's hearts. But like I say, it's our GP services that are the first port of call, and we just need to make sure that the appropriate services are in place there. So thanks again, folks.
Thank you, Cathy. So obviously that motion has been carried. We can move on then to item number 28, which is a notice of motion from Councillor Savage. I can hand over to you, Michael, if you want to read the motion, just advise who's second it and then proceed.
Yes, Chair. Just with your indulgence, there's a slight amendment to the original motion with adding on the line at the very bottom. Council also requests the Chief Executive to invite the Down Community Health Committee and Daisy Hill Pathfinder Group to meet full council to discuss the challenges and threats to our local hospitals in a post-pandemic environment. Chair, I have circulated that to Sarah, and she can obviously forward the full motion if required. I also note in it that there's a misspelling of the word Down as in Down Hospital, and that will need rectified in the minutes to read DOWNE, please. So the motion, Chair, reads, this council calls on the Health Minister, Robin Swan, to reaffirm the Department of Health's commitment to the retention and expansion of Daisy Hill Hospital in Newry and the retention and expansion of the Down Hospital in Downpatrick. Council notes with concern media reports that there are plans to close half of the hospitals across the north within the next 10 years and calls for clarity from the Minister to allay the fears of residents of this district who have had to fight to retain vital services at our two cherished local hospitals. Council requests that the Council Chief Executive writes to the Health Minister, seeking assurances from him that there are no plans to close or downgrade the Down Hospital or Daisy Hill Hospital within the next 10 years or beyond, and request an urgent meeting with the Minister to discuss the future plans for our two local hospitals, to seek guarantees that neither of our two local hospitals will be downgraded or closed as part of any future plans for the delivery of healthcare across the north. Council also requests the Chief Executive to invite the Down Community Health Committee and Daisy Hill Pathfinder Group to meet full council to discuss the challenges and threats to our local hospitals in a post-pandemic environment. Chair, the motion, as outlined, is fairly self-explanatory and rightfully seeks urgent clarity from the Minister for Health, Robin Swan, on rumours of his department potentially hatching plans post-COVID to halve the number of hospitals across the north over the next decade. Chair, if the rumours are to be believed, we could be looking at the scenario where we have the five so-called golden hospitals at the Royal, the Ulster, Craigavon, Antrim and Alt McElvain. With the remaining hospitals, including Daisy Hill and the Down, being potentially relegated to phone-ahead urgent care centres. There has been a review headed up by the consultant at the Royal entitled The Review of Urgent and Emergency Care, which I believe was completed pre-COVID, but is still to see the light of day. It is imperative that this report is published and consulted on so that we can see the stark reality of what key strategists in health here are thinking. Are we facing the threat of having our two local hospitals reduced in status to different grades of urgent care centres? If we are, then we need to maintain solidarity as a district and not allow this to happen to either of our two beloved hospitals. We cannot allow our council to succumb to a divide and conquer approach which sees one end of the district get more crumbs from the table to the other end. We need to fight this and fight to protect and enhance the services at both our local hospitals. No crumbs, real services retained and enhanced. That is what we want for our people. Our two fantastic hospitals at the Down and Downpatrick and Daisy Hill and Uri have been synonymous with words like care, excellence, dedication, cherished and local. But unfortunately, they've also been synonymous with the words fight and campaign. The late Eddie McGrady and campaigners from right across our community, they had a 30-year campaign to get our new hospital at the Down, but it seems that ever since the first foundation stone was laid, it has been a constant battle to retain its status as a local hospital, and I commend the Down Community Health Committee for their excellent work in fighting to retain and enhance services at the Down. The same has been the case for Daisy Hill, which, despite excellent work by the Pathfinder Group in recent years to secure its acute status, services such as stroke have been stripped back and taken to the ever-growing beast that is Craigavon Area Hospital. And if these rumours are correct, Daisy Hill could be playing second fiddle again to the hospital that is a short run down the M1 from the Royal. We as a district should not have to constantly look over our shoulder for fear of the centralising grim reapers within the Department of Health attempting to swing the axe again at our cherished local hospitals to enhance services within a cluster of sites in the greater Belfast area. The fact is, we as elected representatives for the people of Newry, Moreland, Down have an obligation to speak up for our people and ensure that we are not treated as second-class citizens when it comes to access to local hospital services and first-class healthcare. Instead of planning to close local hospitals, the department should be looking to enhance real frontline services locally at both the Down and Daisy Hill. The strategy needs to be looked at regionally, and that means fair access to hospital services to the people who live in the southeast corner of the north. Why is there such a fixation with the northeast corner? Do the people down here not count? Instead of looking constantly to centralising key disciplines based on population density, should take a reality check in relation to the geography of this place and the road network that has been crumbling due to decades of underinvestment and lack of real funding from the British government to recalibrate the North's infrastructure after decades of conflict. If the road network had been developed, these potential plans may have been given a fair wind, but they haven't, and we will not tolerate our people being put at risk because they have to travel further for essential treatment. I have no doubt that these proposals are not real-proofed. They can't be because no matter what angle you look at them, from people in rural areas, they will be disadvantaged. We are a huge rural hinterland and we need to fight to protect the health rights of our rural communities across our district. Roads go both ways, so why not ensure a fair spread of specialist services across the north? If we are good enough for cataract surgery, we are good enough for other disciplines. Instead of operating a trust system that is enclosed and rigid and penalises the people of Newry, Moreland, Down by splitting the district into two, there needs to be better cooperation between the two trusts to provide quality joined up two-centred care at Daisy Hill and Down for our people. We have seen this enhanced as a result of COVID-19, but it's a pity it took a pandemic to trigger such greater cooperation. We as a council need to look at the challenges we face in health and ask ourselves, are the current engagement structures we have capable of holding decision makers within health to account into the future, and could they withstand the body blow of a potential decision to halve the number of hospitals across the north? We as a council need to review those structures, and a good place to start would be enhanced engagement with the Down Community Health Committee and the DC Health Pathfinder Group, and on the back of that engagement, develop a three-tiered approach involving the council in fighting to protect hospital services at both ends of our district. Chair, I would propose that both these groups are invited to meet with council in the forthcoming months to discuss their concerns for the future of our local hospitals in a post-COVID world, and I would like to make this a formal proposal to be added to the motion, as I said earlier. We need to get clarity from the Minister. Robin Swan has done a commendable job to date in relation to the pandemic, but we need to be sure that COVID-19 is not being used as a smokescreen by the so-called big picture strategists in health to put the comfort blanket of our, to pull the comfort blanket of our two local hospitals away from us and replace them with varying grades of urgent call centres. That is why, Chair, I propose this motion calling on the Health Minister to make an unequivocal statement stating that there are no plans on his watch to implement or explore plans to halve the number of hospitals in the north over the next decade, with our two local hospitals being relegated in status. We need cast iron guarantees that there are no plans to downgrade or close the Down Hospital Downpatrick or Daisy Hill in Uri. We demand two fully functioning hospitals at both ends of what is a large geographical area of Northern Ireland. We do not want to be left with buildings that resemble hospitals but deliver services comparable to glorified health hubs. We will be watching carefully to ensure that the COVID recovery plans at both trusts will lead to a swift and full restoration of pre-COVID services at the Down and Daisy Hill. What is apparent is that the plan up until the end of June shows no mention of additionality of services at the Down to what is currently there, and that has caused some concern. The recovery plans are an important first step and the ideal opportunity to demonstrate to the people of this district that these rumours are just that, rumours, and there are no plans to downgrade or close hospital services in our district. We've had a refreshing level of honesty and openness from Robin Swan as Health Minister, and that's commendable, throughout this pandemic, and in relation to the real challenges we faced as a society in keeping our loved ones safe. This motion calls for the same level of honesty and transparency from the Minister in relation to the future of our two local hospitals. It is imperative that Chief Executive writes to the Minister asking for these guarantees and assurances in writing. Only when we get the response will we know if the rumours are just rumours or if we as a community face further years of fighting to retain our two beloved hospitals. If it is the latter, I have no doubt every single member in this chamber is up for that fight, as is every citizen of the district. Chair, I propose a motion with the additional amended wording inviting the Down Community Health Committee and Daisy Hill Pathfinder Group to meet full council and to discuss local post-pandemic hospital provision, and I ask the members for their support. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike, can you advise me second on your motion?
Councillor Dermot Curran.
Okay. Dermot, I'll bring you in afterwards. There's a couple of members that want to speak. First of all, I'll bring you in at the end there. Councillor Hanlon, you were in first there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I want to welcome this motion coming from Councillor Savage. I welcome the fact that we're writing to the Minister. I do believe I had proposed this a couple of weeks ago at another meeting, that he would come and meet with the councillors. So, you know, if we're going to write to him again, I think that's to be welcomed. I think as well, you know, we meet regularly with the trust, and not the special meeting happened there, like the minister only coming through full council tonight. I just want to highlight something that happened in my constituency, and I'm not going to go on all evening, but basically a young mother emailed me over the weekend to say that her child had started to choke over their dinner, which is every parent's worst nightmare. I'm sure you will all agree if you have children. And when she rang 999, nobody answered. And she couldn't get an ambulance. And luckily she was trained in first aid. So even though she panicked, she was able to save the child. And then she had to drive 30 miles to the Royal Victoria Hospital to the children's unit. So, you know, if anything is as stark and as real as that about restoring our A&E in Downpatrick, I don't think that could be more clear. You know, so I think Minister Swan does need to give those assurances, you know, that we are going to see a restoration of the services in the Down. And, you know, we go to meetings and we listen to Seamus McGoran and we listen to Shane Devlin and Michael Bloomfield, and they are so excellent, and they give us lovely lip service. But, I mean, there's reality there, that I wake up to an email like that on a Saturday morning. And how do you respond to that girl? What do you say to her? Well, sure, at least the child's okay. No, I don't think so. you know, you have to, we have to give her the assurance that, you know, collectively, that all political representatives will fight for the services of not only the Down, but obviously Daisy Hill as well. And I think I've made my point. I'm not going to labour on it.
Thank you. And I'm very startling indeed to hear that. Councillor Murphy, you're in next there.
Thanks, Laura. I'm going to be very brief just to say that, you know, I agree with the sentiments and obviously support this motion. My concern would be that this is people making decisions on health matters, giving us, letting us down gently. So I do agree it would have to be a cross-party, cross-community approach to this. That's how we're going to ensure that we retain the services. I have the experience from working County Louth, what they did with the Louth Hospital. Again, it was a very slow but sure draining of resources, and eventually they turned it into a clinic. You know, but you had all the promises from all the different boards that this was not going to happen, from all the different parties that this was not going to happen, but that's exactly over a period of time did happen. You know, so we definitely can't afford to take our eye off the ball. You know, so I fully support this motion.
Thank you, Declan. Councillor Hannah.
Sorry, Chair, I was just resting my eyes. Chair, firstly there, Michael, thanks for bringing that motion forward there, and the DUP will be wholeheartedly supporting your motion. Daisy Hill, which would be basically the hospital I would go to if anything ever cropped up about my house, we've relied on it for a few generations now, so we've always had excellent care on it, I don't want to see it downgraded in any shape or form, but I suspect what Councillor Murphy has said there is possibly happening by stealth. They're gradually lowering and removing services as they go, so they do. I honestly do believe that's happening. It's very gradual, as it is. I think the health minister does need to be confronted on it, so that he can give a clear answer to what you're asking, Michael. On the Down Hospital, I always think the Down Hospital has never met its full potential, so it hasn't. It never really got going as a hospital in the sense that it was, that the Downpatrick people in that area all wanted. It does operate, it does not deliver services that I think it could deliver. So, on everything you're saying, Michael, I wholeheartedly support you, and the sooner we meet the minister, the better. So thanks for bringing it, Michael.
Thank you, Glenn. Councillor Kern, sorry, Dermot, I'm just coming to you now. You formally seconded the motion.
Yeah, I do. And I want to thank Michael Savage for bringing this motion to different councils tonight. Sorry, late hour, 10 o'clock, that we're discussing it. But is that important that we have to give it some discussion anyway? And I totally, what Michael has said in the motion covers everything that needs to be said about that there. And the important issue that needs to be underlined here, that we need to meet the Health Minister, Mr. Swan, and ask him directly, and ask him to be honest with us too at the same time. You know, what is happening to the two hospitals that has been mentioned here, Daisy Hill and the Downey, and to be honest with us to see what their future is. Because there is something that's not been told to us at a meeting we have. You know, Hanlon said there we meet the different ones to get there, but no, there's something not been told. And I would like that when we meet them this time, that they be honest with us and tell us exactly what the future is for those two very important hospitals. They are one end of the council, Newry and Downpatrick are there, and they're two very important hospitals that play a very important part in the nation to the well-being and health people within this district. So I'm not going on any longer, Chair, but I fully support the motion and thank Michael for bringing it and what the rest of the people have said here tonight there. It's truly needed very badly, both of them, and we need to know the answers.
Thanks very much, Dermot. We've got Councillor Taylor's looking in, then we'll head back to Michael to sum up. David, do you want to go on ahead there?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Listen, Chair, happy to support the motion. Certainly in any conversations I've had with the Health Minister, I've emphasised the importance of both facilities, and that's the same for my colleagues as well. Daisy Hill would obviously be my principal focus, given where I represent, where I live. But you know, I certainly know what those representatives in my party that are from the Down end, you know, would be very, you know, very supportive of retaining the and improving facilities at the Down Hospital as well. So it's not there's no doubt about where we stand on the issue, and it's certainly something I've emphasised to the Health Minister on occasions that I've spoken to him about health issues. I obviously, you know, in that regard too, he won't be the health minister forever as well. And, you know, we might see some other party take it on at some stage, and they will face challenges in this regard as well. So it's important that, you know, we all emphasise our support for these facilities going forward. And again, finance is an issue. I think we, you know, we need to retain facilities and to improve facilities. Necessary finance needs to be provided to the health department as well. And I think if Michael could maybe give some consideration to that as well, I think it's important that the executive, you know, reflect on that, because it's difficult to sustain resources. It's a bit like the roads issue. If you don't get the finance, you can't provide the service that you want to. And that's vitally important in that regard as well. And I'd ask if Michael maybe give consideration to including something regarding the executive providing necessary finance to sustain and protect the services that are there within the health service in Northern Ireland at the minute too. So I think that's vitally important. But certainly fully behind the sentiments of the motion here, and certainly I wouldn't define wanting and protecting the facilities that we have here, because it's as vital to my family as any other family in the area too.
Thank you, David. Was that an amendment you were proposing there?
Yes, I think we should write to the executive as well. You know, obviously, you know, it's rumours at this stage, but it's like everything else. You have to be aware of, you know, situations arising and be prepared for them. But I think as part of this process, the executive must ensure that the health department is provided with the necessary financial resources to protect and enhance the facilities that we have as well across Northern Ireland.
Okay, thank you. David, so we're handing back to you, Michael, to sum up into a daily table. Could you accept the amendment proposed by Councillor Taylor?
Yeah. Yes, Chair, I propose that after the word North, we put in that the Chief Executive also writes to the Executive asking that the necessary finances provided to the Health Minister to secure the retention of our local hospitals.
Thank you, Michael. There seems to be unanimous agreement there. Do you want to sum up really briefly? And then
yes, absolutely. It's been a long night. You know, and, you know, I will, when I'm speaking to David there, you know, commend his colleague for the work that he has done. It's a very difficult role, and I know that whoever's coming behind him in the next mandate will have a difficult challenge in relation to the finances, and that's where the executive has to take responsibility for this. And I believe that we have to get away from the fixation of a northeast regionality to where we put our clusters of specialist units. There's no reason why we can't look to attract those to our area, and also with the proximity to the border for Newry as well. But it's very important that services and specialist disciplines are brought to the Down, and the fantastic new hospital that was built not that long ago is enhanced and retained and is allowed to grow. You know, because we have a big population here. We have a big elderly population and a big young population. And on the back of that, they need healthcare and they need health services and accessibility. And until such times as we're going to get a motorway network that links every hospital to every provincial town in Northern Ireland, we need to factor in the geography and the road network here. And particularly, we need to rural-proof any decision. And that's why I'm very grateful for the support we've received tonight. And I'm happy to accept that amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. That motion is unanimously passed. Okay, so we can move on now to the last motion that's actually on the papers itself is from Councillor Howell. Roisin, can I hand over to you to read out the motion and advise who is seconding it, please?
Thanks, Chair. So I'll just let the Councillor McGuinness be seconded in the motion. That this Council recognises the upset and distress of the destruction of records by the Commission of Investigation into Mother and Baby Homes has caused to women, their families and their representative groups. That this Council recognises that this is an all-Ireland issue and one that will affect survivors in the North who were sent to these homes. That this Council recognises that survivors have already waited far too long to access their records and calls on the Dublin Government's Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman, to publish without delay access to records and legislation. That this Council also calls on the Minister of Children to fully support Catherine Fushin's amendment to the Civil Registration Bill of 2021 to ensure that all adopted people are given unconditional access to their birth certificates. And that this Council also calls on the Executive Minister for Health, Robin Swan, to do everything in his power, including legislate if necessary, to preserve and protect the records from the institutions in the North and to make this documentation easily accessible for victims and survivors. The Mother and Baby Homes and Migrant Laundries report is a sad and troubling insight into the suffering of thousands of women and their children. The research report is a difficult read, but yet an important step towards addressing the harm caused to survivors and the pain they have endured. It gives a sad and troubling insight into the lived experiences of thousands of women and girls and now adult children. The harsh treatment of some of these women was cruel, unjust and inhumane. As someone who was a young, unmarried, first-time mother, my heart breaks for those women and girls who did no wrong, whose rights were ignored and whose children were so cruelly taken away from their arms. For those children who never knew their mothers, who for too long have been kept in the dark, they were failed in every level and we cannot allow them to be failed any longer. Whilst we can never make up for what wrongs they have been through, we must do, we never can make up for what they have been through, we must do all we can to ensure that survivors' voices are heard, to support them and, where possible, give them answers, information and recognition. We recognise how sensitive this issue is and how raw the pain still felt by all who have suffered. So it is important that as we move forward, carefully and respectfully, while ensuring that at all times the voices of the survivors and their now adult children are at the centre of this process. Many of those survivors shared their often deeply personal story with great courage and bravery, despite how upsetting this was, as they were determined to ensure the truth came out. For them then to hear subsequently that their testimonies may have been cast aside and discarded as yet another example of survivors being treated with utter contempt. The upset and distress caused to these women, their families and their representatives groups on learning of this, along with previous media leaks, disrespectful language and poor consultation, has only compounded their grief and in many ways added further insult to their pain and suffering. Therefore, that I would ask this council recognises once again that this issue is an all-island one and will affect survivors in the north who were sent to these homes, and the council carry out the actions as outlined in the motion which I've just read. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Roisin, about very good and heartfelt motion as well. Councillor McGuinness, you're second in the motion. Do you want to come in and speak at this stage?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'll keep it short. I'd like to welcome this very troubling and sensitive motion by Councillor Hyle on the mother and baby homes and the Magdalene Laundries report. Councillor Hyle has outlined the vast majority of reasoning behind this motion, and I believe it is extremely important that the families affected by the injustices carried out in these homes have their voices heard and difficult questions answered truthfully. They need to be supported on the rest of their journey in order to get some sort of closure to the horror and degradation that they have endured at the hands of the church and state in both jurisdictions on this island. I am happy to second the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Una, Councillor McKevitt.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm going to keep a very important motion, and we'll be supporting it tonight, and I'll try and keep as short as I can on it. But first and foremost, the SDLP, we would like to recognise the victims and survivors who have been subjected to the hurt and suffered harrowing experiences, and we are committed to doing all that we can to support them. The support process that put victims and survivors at its centre, and welcome that they will design the pathway to truth. It is a welcome approach, and we've taken that the public inquiry can, and in our view, should be taken forward. The SDLP will play our part in continuing to work with the victims and survivors and other partners to shape a fair, just, transparent process that puts those affected and the truth at its heart. There must be a parallel process alongside the co-design work for the victims and survivors that ensures access to support services for all those affected and works out urgently the details of the redress scheme that must be quickly put in place. It is crucial, and we must have assurances from the Executive Office that they will bring forward support immediately. Anything that would see a further delay in redress and support to these victims only serves to compound the abuse and the experience, many of whom were young women and young children. Today is a step forward for this area and for the victims, but we must remember it's another step in a long, painful journey for those impacted. Our thoughts and promises and our actions must be for the women and the children today, and that in many more days ahead. To be quite honest, I'm not sure it's our argument who was right or who was wrong to destroy records, etc. But it is certainly correct and right that those who wanted animosity should be guaranteed that animosity to encourage the people to tell their stories that they would otherwise loathe to share. And it is correct and right that the 549 witnesses, of whom 304 were mothers, 228 babies and children, 75 of those identified to remain obscured. And it's very important that they do so. All should get the support needed to help them and get through this horrendous time and be entitled to information to get to the truth. So we will be supporting tonight. I am cutting my comments short on this, but I mean, there's loads of information. But just to commend Roisin and Una for bringing this motion to the council, and as I say, you know, hopefully we'll get they'll get the answers that they deserve and that the help that they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Councillor Hyle, and Councillor McGuinness, for bringing this forward and keeping it in the forefront of our minds. I think it was one of your other colleagues, Councillor Kimmins, MLA Kimmins, that first brought this up with myself a number of years ago with regard to the Mother and Babies Home. So, yeah, no, happy to support, and also again just whatever again just reiterate the calls for. You know, certainly in this jurisdiction, you know, Minister Swan, that he'll do everything he can to preserve and protect records here in Northern Ireland and make them easily accessible for all, and helping victims, survivors move forward in their own way. So, yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Andy. Councillor Owen?
Listen, I'll just keep my comments very short on this motion. More than happy to support, and thanks, Roisin, for bringing it forward. What has happened to those women have been heartbreaking. I've read some of the stories, certainly with this motion coming up, read some of the stories that are out there, and quite frankly, my heart breaks. So certainly the DUP are more than happy to support, and thanks again, Roisin.
Thank you, Catherine. Councillor Taylor?
Thanks, Chair. Again, my comments will be brief on this. I thank Councillor Hyle for bringing forward this motion tonight. It obviously is a very sensitive subject. And again, I think all the speakers have been conscious of that, and it has been relayed that some of the stories are heart-wrenching on this issue, and it's difficult to comprehend what you know many of the women are going through. Really can't begin to understand that. But it's certainly incumbent upon our executive to offer all support that we can to those mothers and victims, and certainly anything we can do as a council to try and back that up and reiterate that. We can do that through this motion tonight. So very happy to support it, and thank councillor for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, David. So, Roisin, there's unanimous support there for a very worthy motion. Do you want to briefly sum up?
I'll keep it very brief, Chair. Just to thank everyone for their comments. It is an All Ireland issue, and one that we, as a council group, should be trying to do as much as possible to help these victims and survivors move forward in what has been a very long and slow journey for them. But thanks to everyone who supported the motion.
Thanks very much, Roisin. That's been unanimously passed. Thank you for that. Okay, folks, so that's the end of the actual full agenda. As you will know, you've been circulated with the wording of a motion that was received outside of time from Councillor Hannah and Councillor Taylor. As we know, that would require the suspension of a standing order and 80% of those present and voting for that. And if that happens, then we hear the motion, and if it doesn't, then we don't. It's as straightforward as that. So perhaps I'll hand over to either Doreena or Sarah to take us through the sort of process in terms of the suspension of standing orders.
It's just a recorded vote then. We need, I think we've 27 councillors left on the call, so we would need 21 of those voting to approve. So I'll just go through the recorded vote.
Yeah, please do, Sarah. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
For the suspension of standing orders.
Councillor Brown.
For.
Councillor Burgess has left. Councillor Byrne.
For.
Councillor Casey has left. Councillor Clark.
Against an outline that the motion is not an emergency motion and shouldn't be considered as an emergency motion, because the content of the motion is already being investigated by BPS. So why have the motion?
Councillor Kern.
For.
Councillor Devlin.
For.
And then Enright are absent. Councillor Finnegan?
Against.
Gallagher's absent. Councillor Gibbons?
Against.
Councillor Hanlon?
Against.
Councillor Hannah?
For.
Hart?
Against.
Kyle?
Against.
Councillor Larkin.
Against.
Councillor Lewis.
Sir, sorry, my Wi-Fi dropped off there. I'm going back in there. What's the vote for?
It's the recorded vote for the suspension of standing orders.
Oh, yeah. Hover, please.
Councillor McGuinness.
Against.
Councillor Malone is absent. Councillor Mason.
Against.
Councillor McAteer.
For.
Councillor McAvoy and McKee are absent. Councillor McKevitt.
For.
Councillor McMurray.
For.
Mulgrew.
Against.
Councillor Murphy.
Against.
O'Hara. Councillor O'Murray.
Against.
Councillor Owen.
For.
Councillor Riley is absent. Councillor Rowan.
Yes.
Councillor Savage. You're on mute.
For.
Is absent. Councillor Stokes.
For.
Councillor Taylor.
For.
Okay, so I have 13 for the motion, 14 against, and no abstention.
Thank you, Sarah, for doing that. So then the obviously decision there is that standing order shouldn't be suspended. So that's the end of that for this evening. So thank you to everybody for their cooperation tonight. I know it's been a long meeting, and she will see you all again soon.